is the Grahlian Report. The unusual, weird news, anomalies, exopolitics. It's Beyond the Fringe, where conspiracy theory can become conspiracy fact. This is the Grahlian Report with your host, Micah Hanks.
From hundreds of miles beneath terra firma in the depths of the hollow earth, coming to you live from the Moho Discontinuity, it's the Grahlian Report. I'm your host, Micah Hanks. As always, joined in studio by our friendly Grahlian staff, the producer extraordinaire, the man with a smirk on his face, Mr. Chris Hayes. Chris, welcome to the program.
I love you, Dan.
Yeah, I guess you've been listening to our commercials. And then also joining us, the Reverend himself, taking a night off from saving the world, one spirit at a time. He's on the master console directly behind me, Mr. Matt, the Reverend Oakley. Matthew, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me. And tonight I'm saving souls across the airwaves.
And when I think of Matt as the Reverend, the image that always comes to my mind is the creepy Reverend from Poltergeist 2.
Well, yeah, Matt's creepy.
You're all going to die in there.
Oh my goodness. And all you, my friends out there in Radio Land, are about to hear something truly remarkable and amazing. That's what we do every week here from 8 to 11 p.m. Eastern Time. It is the Grahlian Report. You've locked in. Welcome to the program. You can reach us by email here on the program, info@GrahlianReport. You can also send us a text message anytime, 828-367-7201. We'll give out more call-in and contact information a little bit later. But first, I hate to begin this week's program on a downer. But I tell you, there's been some dangerous stuff going on in the Moho this week. I'm sure with our track record, with our history, that people listening to this probably think that we are a bunch of hucksters, that we're trying to pull one over on people. I couldn't make up the kind of stuff that goes on in the world of the Grahlians on a week-to-week basis, and what I'm about to tell you is entirely true. I was at one of our remote commands the other night performing routine maintenance when on my BlackBerry smartphone I received an email.
Was that an approved product placement plug?
No, it was not.
Okay.
Sorry, producer. No, and I don't even know how this email was sent to me via email, because this message looks more like something that should have been sprawled on a wall or on a stone or
chiseled.
Something. Chiseled or engraved with a fingernail, because let me just tell you.
Possibly carved into a potato?
Or maybe
used as a stamp?
I tell you, we have to be careful when we talk about potatoes on this program. I'll just, you know, and I, we it's been quite a roller coaster ride here at the Grahlian Report over the last couple of days. We had to contact some of our legal department and see how to proceed with this. Initially, I was told not to mention this, not to respond, but now I think that, hopefully the problem has been resolved. I think that those of us here in the Moho and those involved with this program have been cleared of any wrongdoing, and I don't think that that we are in any potential danger, and therefore I think I can come clean and tell people exactly what kind of threats had been leveled against two members of the Grahlian staff. And I'll tell you right now who they were. That was myself, Micah Hanks, and our producer, Chris Hayes. And here's exactly what the message in question said. I will read this verbatim for you. It said, "I am Hadel. You break treaty with our race. The pale one, who is undead zombie, stole my baby. We angry. We will remove you from our home. We will kill you and your interns. We spare the reverend. He kind man with pretty eyes. Bring baby, my little potato baby, or face dead. Respond or face dead." So immediately, I didn't know exactly what to think. I first wanted to contact, because, you know, we've had a good relationship with the Hadel insurgency ever since, you know, an attempted takeover of the bunker here, where we narrowly escaped death ourselves. So first thing I wanted to know was, Chris, have you been kidnapping potato babies over the last week at all?
I've been advised by my lawyer not to speak on this.
I don't think you've taken any Hadel babies. Now, I know that you had a delicious-looking shepherd's pie the other night, which happens to have mashed potatoes. However, now, we did enjoy a chicken dinner a couple of nights before that included a mashed potato container with some of, you know, the little gravy thing.
Where do you think I'm getting all the mashed potatoes from?
Well, I thought they were coming from the chain chicken restaurant that we went to, on terra firma.
Wow.
Anyway, well, we've been advised, again, not to talk about specifics, but what I can say is that no one here, undead or among the living, have been actively involved in the kidnapping of any Hadel babies. But we will be compliant with to what degree we are able with the Hadel insurgents in trying to right the situation and to find the hidden or lost Hadal child.
Well, I'm glad you feel that way, Micah, but I felt like my rights really were violated with that email, and you know, it upsets me that I am not given on a daily basis free Hadal babies, that you know, it's not given to me, you know, without work or anything, that they're not giving it to me, so I'm going to stand solid. I'm going to stand solid. You guys don't have to join me, whatever. I'm going to stand solid with our Terra Firma brethren, and you know what? Occupy Moho.
Occupy Moho. Yes, we're going to occupy the Moho discontinuity. We do not claim any wrongdoing. No one here among the living or among the zombie kind. You know, Chris is a zombie in recovery. And frankly, you know, the guy, I wouldn't say that the guy, you know, whether or not he has ever, I think I speak accurately that it's been years since Chris attempted to eat a human's brains. But you've been pretty good with the Hadals, and I don't think you've tried to kidnap any Hadal potato face babies or anything, which is what's so curious, because the last line in this email clearly reads, "We spare the reverend, he kind man with pretty eyes, bring baby my little potato baby or face dead."
At least someone knows me.
Yeah, they know your character, Matt. We here in the studio think we know you better, though.
Wee-wee?
Can I go wee now? Wee! But anyway, oh goodness, so I think we're in the clear on that one. But you know, to any Hadals out there who may be listening to this broadcast, and I know that they are, because there's a little group of them that gather, in fact there are some of them that are children, and I often give them candy before and after the program, even though their parents get very upset at the human man bringing sweets. You know, "Oh, you remember me, I'm the sweetie man, the sweetie." Anyway, I'm the sweetie.
I've always wondered why you say it in that like accent.
I'm sorry. why I do that?
Yeah, why you say it in that accent?
I wasn't trying to cut you down, by the way, man. But sweetie, man, what's wrong with that accent?
I just, why the hell not use your normal voice?
I am the sweetie man. Hello,
yeah,
little.
It's a little bit more intimidating.
That's actually creepier. Yeah. Than that.
Hello, children. I am the sweetie man.
I got some sweets for you here in my pocket.
Hi, why don't you go get us a popsicle?
I don't know how much further down in the cellar the Moho is, but...
yeah, we keep our popsicles at room temperature down here in the Moho, because the pressure is such that it actually, even if they melt, they maintain a popsicle-ish form, because the pressure keeps it... Nah, anyway, never mind. I'm sure people are probably hoping that at some point we're going to get to some real news, and I'll tell you this, hopefully during the first hour we will get to a bizarre cattle mutilation story that I came across this week, and this is entirely serious. All fun and joking aside... I was treated to an impromptu interview with a gentleman. We'll call him Ron. And Ron was from Colorado, and he had actually worked as a cowboy on a ranch in Colorado in the 1970s. And I'll tell you what, now I've heard some cattle mutilation stories. This one is probably one of the best. We'll get to that a little later. And then during hour two, we will be joined by a very special guest tonight. His name is Tom Fusco. He's the author of the new book, Behind the Cosmic Veil. And what Tom has put together with this book is indeed a new vision of reality and the way that the world and the cosmos around us may actually work. This involves science, this involves religion, this involves the paranormal, and I think that Fusco, probably better than most out there, has taken a very, very learned approach to, you know, combining really, you know, well-thought-out scientific principles along with religious... not so much, you know, I wouldn't say that he takes religious concepts and tries to justify them with science, but I think that he does, I think as Tom put it to me during one of our conversations, he kind of takes the role of the apologist in a sense, but he is showing that there is not a contradiction between what, for instance, Judeo-Christian scriptures say and the way that that the physical universe around us works scientifically. And then he tries to incorporate in between these two warring factions, because historically we all know that the battle between science and religion has been a rather epic one. Well, he tries to incorporate the paranormal into all this, and altogether comes up with what I think is a pretty logical scientific argument, or interpretation, we'll say, of how the universe works. So that's during hour two tonight with Tom Fusco. But first, I wanted to touch on probably what is one of the most bizarre stories I have read in a long time. I came across this one earlier this morning. The London Evening Standard reported this. The story, I think the headline says it all, "Undercover Police Dwarves Stole My DNA at a Bus Stop." Like I said, we couldn't make this stuff up, folks. A London police force is being sued over claims that it used two undercover dwarves to carry out an anti-terror search. A Russian doctor is claiming 55,000 British pounds, saying that City of London police officers also sexually assaulted him and took his DNA to carry out what he said were, quote, covert biological experiments. Dr. Alexander Sobko of South Kensington claims that these quote-unquote smiling dwarves approached him at a bus stop and searched him under the Terrorism Act. The case will be considered by a high court judge, and the city forces engaged lawyers at taxpayers' expense to defend the action. A city police spokesman said, "We have instructed lawyers to contest the allegations," but this man says that, in all truth, he was accosted by smiling dwarves that sexually assaulted him and obtained DNA for use in covert biological experiments. I wonder what proof the individual has of such wrongdoing, or if there is any. But folks, I can just warn you of one thing. And we say this because we have everyone's best interest in mind out there. If you, or anyone you know, is standing at a bus stop and you see what appear to be smiling dwarves approaching, especially if they seem to have any kind of official uniform, get away from the scene. Get away from the location, because you too may be under potential threat of sexual assault by dwarves who are trying to gather your DNA for biological, covert biological tests.
Is that why it took seven dwarves to overcome Snow White?
You are a dirty, dirty.
Hey man, you're the one talking about dwarves, and if there's anything more inappropriate than dwarves, you know, doing what dwarves do, it's seven of them doing it with a chaste girl.
Listen to this man. Matt, I'm sorry. Reverend, would you bring some holiness to this conversation?
Well, I just got to say, this whole conversation, this whole story made me think of a quote from The Good Doctor. And you know which Good Doctor I'm talking about, Micah.
Is this Mr. Parks and Rec?
No.
No?
The Only Good Doctor.
The Only Good Doctor. Who was a good doctor? Was he a doctor? Oh, a doctor of journalism.
Yeah,
Is it the same word repeated twice over a flaming grill?
No. Not that one. No, there's the part in Fear and Loathing where he says, you know, any basic drug addict can learn to deal with seeing his dead grandmother crawling up his pants leg with a knife in her teeth, but nobody should be asked to handle this trip.
Indeed. Well, when it comes to smiling dwarves extracting people's DNA, that indeed is one trip that I would prefer, if I could help it, to do without. So we'll see what comes of this one. We'll keep our eyes on this one. I don't know. It may be the kind of thing that we do or do not want to have any involvement with. Sometimes there's some things you can't unsee or unhear. That's often the case with stories we talk about right here on this program. It is the Gray Alien Report. I'm Micah Hanks, and we'll be back right after this.
Hey guys, Jamie Havoc in here for UFO Mag. Do you want to receive the best writing there is in ufology, the best writers, editors, and flat out the best magazine that ufology can offer? If so, I highly recommend UFO Magazine. You can check it out at ufomag.com. And if you mention that you heard this on radio, you can get 6 issues for $19.95. Check it out, ufomag.com. Don't miss out. And keep up to date on the hottest topics in ufology. For UFO Mag, this is Jamie Havkin.
If this radio spot were Nikki Baker's life, it would start pretty normal, like this.
And about this far in, Nikki would drop out of high school.
Here, she'd be forced to work 2 jobs.
But then, she'd decide to earn her GED diploma. It would be the beginning of a brighter future. For free info about GED test prep classes, call 1-877-38-YOUR-GED or visit yourged.org and begin your brighter future.
GED is a registered trademark of the American Council on Education, brought to you by Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
High mountain. mountains of Appalachia. It's the Grailian Report with Micah Hanks. To join the program by phone, call 828-398-4886. Skype users can reach the program by calling Skype ID Grailian Report. And now, from hundreds of miles beneath terra firma, in the depths of the hollow earth, live from the Grailian Bunker, it's Micah Hanks.
We're your ambassadors of the unexplained, keeping you company every Tuesday night from 8 to 11 p.m. Eastern Time. It is the Grailian Report, and I'm Micah Hanks. Welcome back to the program. We've been talking about covert dwarves, DNA-stealing dwarves. It's a rather terrifying and perplexing circumstance, but one Russian doctor, I believe a Russian doctor actually, in South Kensington, which I believe to be in the UK, is actually pressing charges and saying that that City of London police officers engaged in this and also sexually assaulted him in order to carry out these covert biological experiments. But speaking of covert biological experiments, Chris, I think we need to get a dispatch from the future. I don't know if I've got my little Morse code sound effect, But if you'd like to go ahead and read a story for us, dispatch from the future, but don't just read it, hey guys, this is a story about meat or something from the future. I mean, really get into it, even though it's a future story, I want you to read it like you're one of those old timey announcers. Okay, breathe some life into it. So with that said, Chris Hayes,
kind of like a newsreel that would play before a movie. During World War II. As everyone's watching the movie, the newsreel comes on. It's like, hey, morale for America, woo!
That's right. Yes, exactly. Yeah, loose lips will be the undoing of this country. So keep them shut. Protect America. That kind of thing.
Okay.
Go ahead, Chris.
Start off with the Morse code thing, Chris or Micah. Do it again. Just so he feels more at home.
Okay. Yeah, I love Morse code.
We're gonna put the filter through on you. Okay, here we go. Ready? 3, 2, 1.
Petri dish to dinner plate. In vitro meat coming soon. First cultured meat burger that could be grown within a year. Lab-grown products are far more environmentally friendly. And demand for meat rising fast as the world population grows. This by Kate Kelland, correspondent from Health and Science Department. In London, November 11th, 2011, from Reuters, scientists are cooking up new ways to satisfy the world's ever-growing hunger for meat. Cultured meat burgers, or sausages grown in laboratory petri dishes rather than made by slaughtered livestock, could be the answer. Good Lord.
You almost made it.
I almost made it. Matt was tickling me the entire time.
I just love the, almost 10-second pause between, our environment department.
Well, Matt, you were tickling me the whole time. It was really hard to not laugh. Anyway, but yes, cultured meat, burgers or sausages grown in laboratory petri dishes rather than made from slaughtered livestock, could be the answer that feeds the world, saves the environment, and spares the lives of millions of super-duper cute and cuddly animals, they say. Granted, it may take a while to catch on, and it won't be cheap, so problem solved. The first lab-grown hamburger will cost around 250,000 euros. That's $345,000 U.S. to produce, according to Mark Post, a vascular biologist at the University of... English people. Maastricht, in the Netherlands. Oh, well, not English people at all, the Netherlands, who hopes to unveil such a delicacy soon. Yes, so for only $250,000, you too can get your fake meat burger.
Well, we all want fake meat burgers.
Well, I guess it's not really fake meat. It just wasn't meat killed.
Yeah, it's ethical meat. So, I don't know. They're going to come up with some, catchy name for it. But unfortunately, right now, it's not fiscally feasible to have this on our dinner plates. Unless people are really rich, don't like the taste of their petri meat, and maybe that's a good name for it, petri meat. What do you think?
And I bet it doesn't even taste half as good as a Kobe burger.
That doesn't sound appealing at all, by the way, petri meat.
Petri meat, yeah.
Ugh.
Well, when it comes to the discussion of meat and where we get our meat and who's harvesting the meat for what purposes, I mentioned at the beginning of the program that we would talk about a unique story I came across this week with regard to cattle mutilation. Have either of you guys read really a whole lot into the phenomenon known as cattle mutilation? Is this something that you guys are familiar with?
A little bit. Not as much as you have. I mean, I've talked to you about it more than several times over the years, but it's definitely weird, wild stuff.
It is. I mean, I've personally investigated at least one instance of alleged cattle mutilation I guess it was a neighboring county here in western North Carolina. And I actually had a naturalist tell me, look, you know, I was there. I saw the kinds of wounds and incisions, you know, on these animals. It looked just like the kind of stuff you see on television, and it did not look like the work of any predator in this region that I've ever dealt with. So, you know, it's certainly a kind of a a creepy thing. And a lot of people, you know, I think over the years have assumed that there was some sort of a government presence or something like that. You know, someone was doing genetic tests on these cows or something along those lines for whatever reason. And that's pretty strange in its own right. You know, what exactly would lead or be the benefit of taking these animals in a typical scenario involving cattle mutilation? We'll go ahead and outline this while I'm postulating exactly what benefit one would draw from this sort of experimentation if it were humans engaging in such. And, you know, I mean, until better evidence comes forward, we have to assume that there is someone, and preferably something intelligent that's engaging in this activity. But what a typical cattle mutilation would entail would be, the animal is discovered lying in a field. Often there are no hoof marks or drag marks or anything like that that are indicative of the animal being brought to that point. It's literally as though the animal was picked up, modified, or operated on. The removal of eyeballs, sex organs, and small tissues and other organs and glands and things, lymph nodes in the body are typical. And then it's as though the animal is literally just dropped back down into the field. And when they're discovered, often these animals have little or no odor, okay, as you might expect around a dead and decomposing animal. And they're typically found to be drained of all their blood, which is pretty strange and even slightly vampiric in its own right.
Exsanguinated, Micah.
Is that the expression?
Yeah, drained of all blood is exsanguinated.
Okay, well, that's what happens with these cow.
You've been waiting like 3 weeks to say that word, haven't you?
Oh, what? It's a good word, man.
I know, it is a good word.
I sound smart now.
And it feels good coming off of your mouth, like exsanguinated.
Yeah.
It sounds kind of sexy.
It is.
You know, I'd hope that we could find someone other than Holly who still says she would not come down into the bunker while you guys are in this room.
Well, I think we just made a few more people not want to come down into the bunker.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, those guys are in.
I think we get a couple more jumping on that bandwagon week after week.
They were in there talking about insanguinating this week. Anyway.
In what?
In what? In V? What? What? No, but no, in truth, this is the kind of thing that happens during these cattle mutilation stories. And, you know, I even went to the FBI's website, and there is, a minimal amount of data in files that have been released over the years by the FBI. But the funny thing is that the majority of cattle mutilation cases are not something that fell within the jurisdiction of the FBI. And that the only cases that they could investigate often were those that occurred on, you know, for instance, native reservations and things like that. So in these circumstances, there's a curious lack of information out there. And typically what happens is these animals are just found rather inexplicably dead with certain organs and soft tissues removed, drained of blood, and lying in a field, you know, as though someone literally dropped them from the heavens back down into these fields. Now, something that a lot of people don't think about when it comes to cattle mutilation, I mean, this has become a popular a popular subject associated with ufology over the last several years, but a lot of people who look at cattle mutilation do not take into consideration some of the fiscal and economic circumstances surrounding the death of cows. You got to keep in mind that these are livestock that are raised by these farmers, you know, for purpose of either, you know, providing milk or providing meat. And which is why I was reminded of this again by your story about, you know, the future of cultured petri dish meat and all this. There's an industry, okay, that involves livestock. And when a person's property and something that that is an investment for them, and in the loss of this, it is a business loss for them. When this happens, this can be very detrimental to people. And so in this instance that I interviewed this fellow, who I, again, to protect his identity, I'm going to refer to him as Rob. I've asked Rob to come on the program. And although I wasn't able to get him to agree to do so this week, I hope in the future that maybe at some point I can get Rob to come on and discuss firsthand his own experiences and his own investigations. But I think I can do it some justice by kind of paraphrasing his story for you as told to me earlier this week right now. Rob, back in the late 1970s, had been working as a rancher in Colorado, and there had been a number of these sorts of instances where things like this had happened. He had also said that these reports of cattle mutilation sometimes occurred in coincidence with lights seen, inexplicable lights. He even said that there was a story told by a brother or a cousin of a friend of his there in Colorado, who claimed that while on a night shift out on one of these farms, was literally taken into the air by something and examined. Now, that's about as far as he would go with this, but, you know, it sounded like your typical classic alien abduction circumstance, where he said that, you know, this light came down and beings came out of a craft. He wasn't able to move, and so he wasn't able to get away, and that he was taken on board a craft by these and examined and then subsequently released, and it really changed his entire life. So there were all kinds of high strangeness reports, some of them almost, of legendary status throughout that region. And a lot of people had begun to wonder what exactly was going on in this particular part of Colorado. Sir Rob, the gentleman that I spoke to, was called one morning. There was another cattle mutilation. This time it wasn't actually a cow. It was a large bull, a prize-winning bull that was on a neighbor's ranch. And so they went to the location. It was a cool morning, I think, in the summertime. And he said that the first thing he noticed was that the bull was lying there. It was dead. The eyes apparently had been removed, but there weren't any bugs. You know, typically when you see a large dead animal lying there, especially in the summertime, you expect to see flies or gnats and other kinds of, insects buzzing around the corpse. And he said the first thing I noticed was that there were no animals, or rather no insects, that were littering the corpse and that were trying to feed on this animal and its fluids. And speaking of fluids, he said that it was clear also from early on that this animal had indeed been drained completely of all blood. Well, he said that as we began to look at the area, and this is what prompted him to start looking around the bull's corpse, he said that initially he thought obviously what had to have happened, because there was, fairly tall grass, but the ground was very, hard and dry. And he said that if the grass had been disturbed, we would have been able to see if there had been anything. So he thought, I started looking for, marks of, like rails or something like that, or anything, landing gear from a helicopter, because he said it was pretty clear to me that what had to have done this was some sort of an aircraft, and in all likelihood, a helicopter picked this bull up and then dropped it. So they began to investigate the grass around the bull, and they don't find the typical landing gear or the evidence of typical landing gear like that you would expect, but he said, we did find these peculiar impressions. And what I mean by peculiar impressions is, he said, they were football-sized, oval-shaped little impressions in the grass. There were three of them. And each of the three, okay, if you were to draw a line between them, would have formed an equilateral triangle. And the bull was essentially right in the center of those. And he said they certainly look like landing gear, but he reminded me that like of legs coming down off of, like, for instance, one of the Apollo era craft, something like that. Now, I don't know that this is by any means the first time that this sort of thing's been happened, but from my own study of cattle mutilation reports, you don't hear a lot of reports. Again, I'm not saying that you never hear these sorts of things, but it's not common that you hear stories about impressions found in the ground around these creatures. That's part of what the great mystery is that has led to this being associated with an airborne mystery. And that is that these animals often are just found lying in the middle of a field, and there's no evidence of them being dragged there or having walked there and then being killed. It's as though the animal's been dropped onto the ground. But he said that there were clear impressions where something with football-sized, oval-shaped pads of some sort had dropped down some sort of an object, okay, and there were three of these impressions that were around the cow. So it was a very interesting story. He said that there had been town meetings about this. The police had been called in. I'd asked if there were Native Americans in the area, and what their interpretation of this situation might have been, and he said that there weren't any in that area, but there was a town hall meeting held where everybody basically went, and they, spoke to law enforcement, and he said that this was probably even more interesting. It kind of details and illustrates for us the almost desperate nature of the circumstances. He said law enforcement that showed up to talk about this with them said, listen, we've had numerous reports, throughout this region, of these cattle mutilations. We don't know what the cause is. We don't have any answers. We don't really know what to tell you to do, aside from the fact that some people are correlating these incidents with the appearance of alleged flying saucers and UFOs. If you see one of these things, we recommend that you don't go near the craft. We recommend that you maybe, you know, if you can, try and photograph it, but do call police and try and get us to the scene. And aside from that, you know, proceed with caution because we don't really know what else to tell you and what these things might be capable of. So, I mean, it was quite an interesting story. And again, I don't think anybody actually ever reported seeing a dead cow falling out of a flying saucer. You know, but there were reports of strange lights being seen. One man, at least in that region, had claimed that he'd been picked up and examined by some sort of strange technology. And then, of course, there were the numerous cattle mutilations. So, of course, I was very interested in this man who claimed he'd been abducted, and I asked Ron if he might have information about how we could find this individual today, and if he's still alive, and if he would even be willing to talk about that. He said that it had been years since he, of course, lived in Colorado. This man now lives in Western North Carolina, and he didn't have information about that. But I found that story incredibly interesting. So like I said, again, I want to try and follow up with this fella at some point, maybe even having come back on the program. And when I told him, I said, I'd like to interview you about this. He says, well, I mean, I've pretty much told you everything that was going on. It was pretty clear that he certainly wasn't someone who was trying to look to draw attention to himself about this. And he was actually referred to me by a family member who had met him, and this came up in casual conversation. You know, they were talking about strange things that had happened in their lives, and he says, well, you know, I mean, a lot of people talk about cattle mutilation, and I actually investigated one firsthand, and I can tell you it was very strange. Maybe even evidence of something otherworldly. Who knows what's really going on there? Do you guys have any thoughts about that? I mean, what kind of aircraft might have come in there and left those impressions? Does it remind you of anything?
I mean, you had brought up the possibility of people, like, thinking it was a helicopter, possibly, or something. Mm-hmm. That just seems kind of far-fetched to me. The idea of, you know, you're gonna have to obviously suspend a creature that large from some sort of cable or harness or something.
And not to mention, people would hear a helicopter in the area too. Nobody described, you know, loud noises or motors or, you know, chopper blades going at night, you know.
Yeah, and I'm even disallowing that, really. But the idea of, like, the stability of a helicopter, how are you really going to guarantee that that bull is not going to move around and thrash about and could totally, you know, throw that
if it were a
helicopter
smaller,
out of sync.
Did you see the photographs of the helicopters that were airlifting the rhinos out of one area of Africa into another to avoid being killed by hunters? Or
were they sedated at all? Or
I believe they were slightly, but they were. It was kind of insane how they did this, and I would not want to be a part of this at all. Just, you know, for the sheer safety reason you just mentioned, they had these rhinos suspended from their feet and blindfolded. So they were hanging upside down, blindfolded, from a helicopter.
Oh, wow. Wow, cruel and unusual, they say. But, no, but, you know, the thing is when he first began to mention helicopters, Ron, when he was telling me this story, the first thing I thought was, oh, I see what's going to happen. You know, we hear all these stories about cattle mutilations and things, and now I'm going to hear a firsthand encounter, and there's going to be evidence of, you know, something terrestrial. And boy, did that story ever take a different direction. You know, I was anticipating that he would ask about, or that he would begin to tell me about evidence of a helicopter of some sort, you know, maybe even a military, because I assumed that maybe a larger military-type helicopter wouldn't have as much trouble, you know, lifting a cow. Now, you look at, you know, like the emergency helicopters, Mama, you know, that operates with Mission Hospital here in the area, you know, that kind of a helicopter, although I don't doubt that they could lift a cow. Indeed, if they were going to try and pick up a live, struggling animal, it could certainly cause problems, let alone, you know, a prize-winning and very large bull like what was described in this instance and killed. But, you know, it's a weird circumstance. I don't know. And you know, I'd almost hoped, as I'm hearing this story, that it was going to go in the direction of a helicopter so that I could, you know, again go, aha, so there's a, you know, an earthbound explanation here. You don't hear a lot of reports of cattle mutilations, you know, that involve landing gear and evidence of it in the soil around these creatures, but that's indeed what Ron described to me here. He said that there were, you know, these football-sized little oval-shaped indentations in the ground, and he said that that ground was very hard, especially in June or July, which is what time of the year it was. He said it would have been very difficult for something to have made those indentations, you know, had it not been fairly large. And he said that it looked to me at that instance, here we were looking at this dead animal lying there, and indeed, here we saw these large indentations. It looked like something, who knows what it was, had landed right there and dropped this bull on the ground. So anyway, that's our cattle mutilation story. Have you ever experienced a cattle mutilation or a similar mutilation? I'd be interested in hearing about it. You know, something else Ron mentioned was that cattle were apparently the only animals that were harmed. No horses, no sheep, and no humans. When we come back, we'll discuss this more here on the Grayling Report. I'm Micah Hanks. Micah Hanks of the Grayling Report here. I just wanted to take a minute, well, really just 30 seconds, to tell you a little about a wonderful project I'm privileged to be a part of these days. It's called Intrepid Magazine. Intrepid is an eclectic melting pot of a variety of different areas of interest, ranging from politics and fringe science to mysteries of the unexplained. You'll hear from authors like Nick Redfern, April Slaughter, Marie D. Jones, and Larry Flaxman, editor and publisher Scotty Roberts, and, of course, yours truly. It's Intrepid Magazine, boldly going. Period. Subscribe today. Visit www.intrepidmag.com.
Want to have some fun? Maybe get a little bit of insight. Get a lay of the land. Want to know what's really going on? Do what I do. Listen to Future Theater. It airs every Saturday, 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern. On the Inception Radio Network.com. We'll see you there.
Skype users can reach the program by calling Skype ID Grayling Report. And now, from hundreds of miles beneath terra firma, in the depths of the hollow earth, live from the Grayling Bunker, it's Micah Hanks.
Featuring some of the music of Mac Maloney tonight on the Grayling Report. He'll be joining us here in a couple of weeks on the program to discuss his new book, which we do actually have a copy of here in the studio. It's called UFOs in Wartime. You know how much I love discussing things like UFOs and their sightings at nuclear bases and during conflicts and wars. Well, that's what we'll be discussing with Mac Maloney when he joins us here on the program. We also have other upcoming guests that include Nigel Kerner. And then during hour two of tonight's program, you don't want to miss this. It's going to be an interview with our good friend, Mr. Tom Fusco, who's the author of the book Behind the Cosmic Veil. We'll be discussing the links between science, spirituality, and the supernatural right here on the Grayling Report between the 9 and 10 o'clock hour. So you want to stick around and hear that. Going to the chat room, Red Pill Junkie, our friend from Daily Grail, mentioned that we should get Chris O'Brien and talk with him about cattle mutilations. And that's true. I have interviewed Chris O'Brien in the past. Chris is a good buddy, in fact. And, of course, folks who listen to our good friends over at the Paracast, Gene Steinberg, also know Chris O'Brien as the co-host of Gene's Paracast program. But Chris, and of course I was friends with Chris back before he actually took that position as the co-host of that program. He wrote a book called Stalking the Tricksters a few years ago. That's a pretty fascinating book if you're interested in things like not just trickster phenomenon, but also, you know, Wendigos and you know, all kinds of other kind of cultural staples that kind of sometimes get lumped in with different substrata of the strange and the unusual. So Chris O'Brien's an astute researcher who's looked into a lot of that sort of stuff. And I think maybe we could stand to get Chris back on the program. He's one of those guys that really, you know, looks at things in a very broad way. And with his Stalking the Tricksters book, he referred to that as a unified theory of the paranormal. Well, I'll tell you this. During Hour 2 tonight, Tom Fusco, our guest, certainly looks at what he calls supergeometric theory. And this is kind of the crux of his book. He looks at this as another sort of, you know, theory of everything that can be applied to not only science and religion and spirituality, but also to the paranormal. And he makes some very good points in this book. So we're going to certainly look forward to talking with Tom about that. And, you know, we can, I don't know if we'll have a whole lot of time. There's so much to cover with Tom, and we've only got an hour to do it. But if you have questions, what I'll tell people to do primarily, if you can, is to try and send your questions via email to info@Graylian Report. We will receive those. You can also send us text messages at 828-367-7201. I don't know that Tom would be opposed to trying to get a phone call in or two, but it may be a little difficult to try and do that during the 1 hour that we have with him. Maybe in the future we can have him back for a little longer. And we're certainly hoping that his book will do well. So check it out. He's available on Amazon.com. It's Behind the Cosmic Veil. We'll have a link to that up on the website later, and we'll also have more information about his work and where you can find the book and follow his future endeavors. So that said, something else we talked about on the program last week was human evolution and language, the evolution of language. There's a new story io9.com reported this week talking about how ape hand gestures reveal where humans evolved language. Until recently, scientists figured that the origins of human language could be found in our vocal cords. And that seems reasonable enough, but the latest evidence, get this, suggests our hands are actually, perhaps, the source of our spoken language. And a bunch of hand-waving primates seem to agree. The latest theories of language evolution suggest that how we, as humans, make the sounds of language, which of course primarily happens in our voice boxes, is less important than how we convey meanings behind them. I'm sure, and we've talked about Coco on the program in the past, but I'm sure folks are familiar with Coco, a chimp who's able to, or not a chimp, she's actually a gorilla, who's able to use human sign language and communicate and do so very well. Well, hand gestures and body language can be just as vital to communication as spoken words, and the burgeoning gesture theory of language evolution suggests that the complex spoken languages we use today in different dialects and forms around the world spring from the relatively simple ideas our ancestors conveyed with their gestures using their hands. Now, researchers at the Max Planck Institute have now offered some serious support for that theory through their research with our four closest evolutionary relatives. These are, of course, chimps, bonobos, gorillas, and orangutans. They've found that all four of these species develop a complex system of hand-waving gestures, and all in the first 20 months of their lives. These range from simply poking other apes to get their attention to slightly more abstract gestures like shaking their heads or extending their arms outward. Crucially, these gestures don't serve any purpose if no other apes are watching, which means that the young wouldn't bother doing them if they weren't cognizant of others. These gestures suggest apes know from a very young age that they are, or that they can convey meaningful ideas to one another. And as the researchers in this study have pointed out, the fact that this develops so young separates the great apes from monkeys, who can develop only such gestures as adults. We and our ape brethren seem to share an innate capacity for calling these hand gestures language, although the article reads that calling these hand gestures might be pushing it, but it certainly is something along those lines. So I think it's interesting, again, you know, that we can teach apes to sign in a language created by humans. They can learn that, and we can communicate between the two, even though they are not able to make, you know, auditory use of auditory language and spoken language like we do. And when it comes to exactly how human language developed, you know, I've wondered about that myself, and we talked about Noam Chomsky's discontinuity theories with regard to whether maybe a cosmic ray or something like that, you know, literally showered ancient humans, and there was a sudden mutation that could have occurred that literally led to an almost overnight, you know, change among a small group of humans, or maybe a large group of humans, that led to their use of language? Could mutation be behind what we know today as, you know, well, what many anthropologists and others have said was a kind of trick that resulted from us trying to warn others of our kind about potential dangers? Could it actually be that we mutated and that there was some sort of external influence for that?
That just seems incredibly, like, way too convenient an answer, the cosmic ray thing, or something like that that would cause a mass mutation. I mean, if you want to take a look at it evolutionarily, I mean, even birds, not just, you know, simians or primates, birds especially have a clear and distinct spoken, chirped language.
Yeah, Matt wrote about that, you know, at the Grayling Report a few months ago.
Well, yeah, and
did,
even...
Chris. Did you read it?
No, I didn't read
it. No,
I didn't think you did. Why would I read your stuff?
Look, do his glazed over eyes look like they could read regular, but we can read it to him.
Actually, it's not glazing that makes my eyes cloudy like that. It's, you know, since I no longer
need... drugs.
No.
He's a zombie.
No.
Matt. Oh.
Since I no longer need to blink, I don't, and as I shamble aimlessly from land to land, it's just, you know, years worth of dust scratches all over my lens.
I see. Well, we can read that to you if we want. But anyway, I'm sorry, where were you going with that?
Well, that birds and other things, I mean, unless cosmic rays or some mutation struck everything that communicates orally and mutated them all, I mean, it's just silly.
Well,
it seems incredibly...
improbable.
Yeah,
best.
Improbable.
And I agree. And I'll tell you this, you know, Chomsky is pretty lone in his attitudes, you know. I think that the general... you know, consensus is that, you know, we developed language slowly as a result of an early warning system, whereas this article, you know, suggests it was probably something that came after, you know, complex, you know, symbols. Actually, they began not very complex. I think they refer to them as, you know, for instance, they're talking here in this article about hand-waving gestures that occur within the first 20 months of life. But they do say a complex system. That's the actual terminology that they use. Okay, so, you know, pointing, tapping, you know, gestures that would indicate come here, go away, maybe look out, you know. And humans can do all these kinds of things, too. But the argument here is that these actually preceded spoken language, and that the next step was actually to literally learn to use vocalizations that would convey these same meanings. So the general theory is that this was something that was a natural process that took place gradually over time. Chomsky, on the other hand, says, you know, it's such a strange activity that humans engage in, the use of vocalizations. And despite the fact that other primates are able to do similar things with their hands in terms of communication, he says that verbal communication is so different and so singular in terms of the way that humans do it as a race, that we have to look at that as being something that is indeed an anomaly. And when he thinks it's an anomaly and he describes it as such, I mean, boy, he means it is an anomaly. And I guess that's why we talk about it here on the program.
And it's weird if you think about it, the, you know, hand, sign language aside, it seems like the more and more verbal our society gets, the less we understand our own hand signals, even as simple as, you know...
the less we understand each other in general.
Yeah.
You know, communication breakdown in general. Well, we won't have another communication breakdown. We'll be back right after this here on the Grayling Report.
If your walls could talk, what would they say?
I have sent children into fits of rage.
I am responsible for a child's speech impediment.
I am the reason a child can't read.
Just because you can't see lead paint doesn't mean it's not on walls, doors, windows, and sills. Today, lead paint poisoning affects over 1 million children. If your home was built before 1978, log on to leadfreekids.org or call 800-424-LEAD.
Brought to you by the Coalition to End Childhood Lead Poisoning, EPA, HUD, and the Ad Council.
For most of us, chocolate is a guilty pleasure. Come on, admit it. You've got a sweet tooth just like the rest of us. But if I told you that eating chocolate was actually really good for your health and happiness, you'd probably say I was in La La Land. Hey, I wouldn't argue. Here's why. Every batch of the fine handcrafted chocolates at La La Land Organics Raw Chocolate is made from scratch, using organic, fair trade, and 100% natural ingredients. From the first bite, you'll know you're enjoying true quality, and the heart shape isn't the only way you'll feel the love. In fact, Every chocolate from La La Land Organics is made by Melody Dawn Germain herself, and according to her own special recipe. You'll be enjoying Ecuadorian heirloom cacao in every bite, along with a selection of wholesome herbs and superfood supplements that not only make La La Land Organics delicious, but really good for your health and happiness. They're all natural, gluten-free, and no dairy, soy, or refined sugars are included, which help them boost your energy, reduce stress, and promote longevity. And as if healthy organic chocolates didn't remove the guilt factor enough, Melody ships all her orders in reusable, food-grade, non-BPA containers designed to eliminate toxic residue and cut down on environmental waste. Be sure and visit Melody's website at www.mdgnewmedia.com. That website again is mdgnewmedia.com. Just click chocolate in the toolbar at the top of the page. You can't miss it. And while you're there, you can see a full list of the ingredients that will be sure to put a smile on your face. And I promise, it's guilt-free. La La Land Organics Raw Chocolate. Why wait? That website again is mdgnewmedia.com.
Fact. This is the Graylian Report with your host, Micah Hanks.
From the dark hills of Appalachia, deep within the recesses of the hollow earth, I'm Micah Hanks, and this is the Graylian Report, your weekly one-stop shop for the weird, the exopolitical, the strange, all that good stuff that you can't find virtually anyplace else. And you have to rely on us for your weekly dose of weird news, exopolitics, and strangeness from beyond the fringe. It is the Graylian Report. I'm Micah Hanks, joined in studio by our friendly Graylian staff, producer Chris Hayes, and engineer Matt Oakley. And during this hour of the program, like I mentioned, we're going to be discussing a revolutionary new approach to understanding science, supernatural, and even spirituality with our guest, Tom Fusco. But first, I do want to toss out a couple of things out there. We've been getting a lot of feedback about mdgnewmedia.com and the fantastic organic chocolates that they offer. We do have their ads playing here during the program. We'll put up a link on the Graylian Report this week so that you can check out Melody Dawn Germain. That's what MDG New Media stands for. Melody's chocolates that she makes, they're fantastic. They're all natural, and they're good for you, too. Check them out. We're going to have a link up on the website, but you'll hear the ads throughout the program where we're talking about La La Land Organics raw chocolates. But that said, this hour we do have a special guest that will be joining us here on the program. His name is Tom Fusco, and Tom is the author of a brand new book. You can find it on Amazon.com. It's called Behind the Cosmic Veil, A New Vision of Reality, Merging Science, the Spiritual, and the Supernatural. I've spoken with Tom briefly prior to the broadcast about this book and about his work, and I tell you, it's truly revolutionary stuff. It's going to be very interesting. It's a wild ride, and I would wager to say that Tom Fusco's approach to the strange and the unusual, and frankly to reality as we know it, is quite different from virtually anybody out there right now who is involved in this kind of research. So it is my honor to welcome to the program now Mr. Tom Fusco. Tom, how are you this evening?
How you doing, Micah?
It's fantastic here in the studio in the dark hills of Appalachia, and we've been cutting it up and having a good time, and now we're ready to get serious and talk with you about your book. Now, you know, of course, you and I, we've chatted a little bit prior to the broadcast, during conversations, and because I'm very interested in your work. You know, I'm fascinated with your approach to all this. Fortunately, I kind of have a little background, and I've managed to be able to read the majority of your book, Behind the Cosmic Veil, but the listeners who are not familiar with your work, I'm sure, would like a bit of a background with regard to you and your research and what it is exactly that you are hoping to accomplish with your book. So if you don't mind, tell us a little bit about who you are and what you do and how you got where you are now.
Micah, of course, as you know from reading the book, I have a pretty scientific oriented type of way of thinking. And at a young age, back in my teenage years, I had a couple of what they would call psychic experiences, which caused me to question how the universe is actually put together. And I knew that what I had learned and what I was being taught in school didn't answer those questions. So I took it upon myself to try to come up with a model of reality that would actually include everything that we observe in reality. And primarily, what we're working with is, as you know, I've studied quite a bit into paranormal phenomena. And that's a large body of observable phenomena. And there's also a significant body of scientific anomalies, various observations that science doesn't have any explanation for. And so we have to have a model that would accommodate those things. And also, as you know, I did some studying into the Bible itself and took a second look at some of the principles that were within that book and understood them in a cosmological way and put all those things together, and that came up with the model of the universe that is described in my book.
Indeed. And, you know, I have to say, it is pretty unique when you can come across someone who, without attaching themselves so much to doctrine and dogma, can really look at the separate elements of reality, whether those be the spiritual or the scientific or what we call paranormal, because we don't really have a better explanation for them. You know, they're strange phenomena. Like you say, there's a great body of evidence that supports the existence of, if you want to call it that, you know, paranormal phenomenon, but we aren't able to really quantify it scientifically, and it kind of, you know, operates within a realm of its own. I think you give a pretty fair treatment to all these branches in your book, and also, you know, seek to kind of unite them. And you know, I don't want to give away too many of the fundamentals here, because, you know, obviously we want folks to check out the book and read it. And I told you this, you know, off the air too, Tom. I don't toss endorsements around lightly. You know, here on the program, I always try and be fair to everyone. But, you know, if somebody's, you know, talking bunk, I'm not one who's going to go on the warpath against them. But, you know, I do like to try and, you know, separate the wheat from the chaff. You know, your book is not only very fair and also very broad in its interpretations, but, you know, I think that you're clearly someone who has really taken time to learn the various aspects, and you're able to move almost seamlessly between the discussion of spirituality and religion and, you know, quantum physics, for instance, you know, in your approaches to all this. Do you think that today people broadening their horizons and opening themselves in an educated way to such realities is the key to taking on a better understanding of reality as we know it? And is that the problem that we're dealing with, that people are just sort of too one-sided in their interests?
Well, I think that there's some of that going on. Certainly, to become proficient and highly skilled, what we would say expert, in any particular field, that person is going to have to take a very specific approach to that field. And so, for example, a botanist is not liable to find himself in a astrophysics lab. But in doing so, we tend to acquire the dogmas and the conventional thinkings that are associated with each one of those particular fields. And so, for example, we have physics, which at the very heart of modern physics is an atheistic, materialistic view of the universe. And their goal is to find a materialistic explanation for everything in reality. Paranormal investigators, for example, they're looking at it a little bit different way. They accept the elusiveness of the phenomena, but they also work in spiritual thinking in a lot of what they do. And unfortunately, what that does is clouds the issue. So what I've tried to do is to come up with some sort of a baseline. In other words, let's come up with a concept of certain mysteries in reality that we can take that same concept and apply it to all these different fields in a uniform way, with a uniform way of thinking about it, and a uniform set of ideas and terminologies. And if we can find that particular model, then this is going to open the door to much of what we have considered to be mysterious and perhaps even unknowable for such a long time.
Indeed. You know, you talk throughout your manuscript of four fundamental paraphysical concepts sort of represent the very essence of what is paranormal, and by all intents, really what is what we would consider, scientific, in terms of observable physics and physical principles of the universe, and even, stemming into the spirituality, of humankind and religions. And I think that this begins with a term that you use and you describe as a critical breakthrough in understanding this sort of thought process. You refer to it as translocation. What exactly is translocation, and how does that apply to looking at the world in this way that you've described?
Translocation is a new term to describe what has gone under many names before. It is the idea that physical reality can be disturbed, displaced, moved, and otherwise influenced by a non-physical source that lies outside of space-time. And both quantum physics and paranormal phenomena give us observations that lead us to the conclusion that there is indeed a source of information outside of space-time, which describes the makeup and the construction of all things in space-time. To give you an example, a human being, every one of us, science recognizes that on some level we are a collection of information, that theoretically if we had the means to process that information, we could assemble an entire human being from that collection of information. But now if we're talking in paranormal phenomena, let's say what they call the Holy Grail of paranormal observations, which is a full-bodied apparition, we are obviously talking about a very similar collection of information. And yet that apparition materializes from that information, the information of which is not stored within the physical universe. There's no mechanism, there's no storage facility or natural hard drive that would hold that information. One of the examples that we have of this is in quantum physics, and it's probably the best example, Micah, when we consider this effect that they call quantum entanglement, the embodiment of it, which is what they call correlated or entangled photons. We could take a photon and split it in half, and we know photons are particles of light. We could split that particle in two and create what's called a correlated pair. Each photon in the pair behaves and acts exactly like a full photon, except at a slightly lower energy level. But one of the things that results from splitting that photon in two is that each of the pair has an opposite polarity, not like a magnet, but quantum polarity that they speak of. How particles spin in a certain direction. So let's say particle A has an upspin polarity and particle B has a downspin polarity. And so these two opposite polarities join together and create a balance within the correlated pair. Now, when physicists are able to split this in two, or basically break the pair apart and have them travel in opposite directions from each other, because they're photons, they're traveling at the speed of light. So particle A is traveling in one direction, particle B is traveling in the opposite one. Then, if they pass particle A through a polarizing filter, which reverses its polarity, let's say it changes particle A's spin from an upspin to a downspin, particle B instantaneously changes its spin to its opposite direction, thereby maintaining the correlated pair.
Uh-huh.
And that doesn't matter whether it happens 5 inches apart, 5 miles apart, or 500,000 light years apart. The conclusion to this is that there is no way that the information about the state of particle A could ever reach particle B traveling through space-time, because it would have to travel many, many times the speed of light, which is physically impossible. Therefore, the conclusion is that the information about particle A exists outside of space-time, and it exists independently of its physical counterpart. And so we could consider that a translocational phenomena, because what we have is an effect with no connected physical cause. It's what physics calls non-locality. One writer put it very well. I was always amused by it. He said, it's like getting a black eye in Miami from a punch that was thrown in Cleveland.
That's a good analogy. And I think wasn't this same sort of thing referred to by Einstein as spooky action at a distance? Is my terminology correct there?
Yes, you're absolutely right. Einstein certainly thought in these directions. But, of course, Einstein was a physicist, and he certainly confined himself to what was physical. So Einstein took his thinking and took it right to the very edge of what was physical. And for him, there was never any need to go beyond that. Hmm. What we are actually doing is taking Einstein's way of looking at things and projecting it further than he did.
Where would Einstein go if he had lived long enough to look at these sorts of things and see the world that we know around us today? Who knows what Einstein would have thought? We're talking with Tom Fusco. I have a feeling that this gentleman probably has some ideas about that very subject. And when we come back from this break, we'll ask him more about exactly what his theories are about this, how this relates to the paranormal. We'll even get into a little bit of spiritual discussion here in a bit. His new book is Behind the Cosmic Veil. You can buy it on Amazon.com, and we'll discuss that more with the author when we come back right here on The Graylien Report. I'm Micah Hanks.
Carl Sagan once wrote that the questioning mind needs to be instilled with both skepticism and wonder, for the universe is a pretty big place, filled with undelved mysteries, sciences, and life that we've barely begun to comprehend. Every month, Intrepid Magazine brings you both the wondrous and the skeptical. Intrepid Magazine focuses on science, metaphysics, UFOs, politics, conspiracies, and unexplained phenomena, all offered up by Intrepid's cadre of writers and contributors, comprised of a host of seasoned authors, pundits, and recognized names in their fields. The universe is indeed a big place, and where other magazines leave off, Intrepid Mag is just beginning. Subscribe to Intrepid Magazine today at www.intrepidmag.com. That's www.intrepidmag.com.
Ranger Station.
Yeah, hi. I'd like to report a bear sighting in the forest.
Uh-huh.
One second I'm having a smoke. Next thing I know, I'm face-to-face with Smokey Bear.
Wow.
And he told me it only takes one spark to start a wildfire.
Did you know 9 out of 10 wildfires are caused by humans?
I had no idea.
That's why Smokey's famous and you're not. If you see someone in danger of starting a wildfire, step in and make a difference. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council. Learn more at SmokeyBear.com.
Only you can prevent wildfires.
Appalachia. It's the Graylian Report with Micah Hanks. To join the program by phone, call 828-398-4886. Skype users can reach the program by calling Skype ID Graylian Report. And now, from hundreds of miles beneath terra firma, in the depths of the hollow earth, live from the Graylian Bunker, it's Micah Hanks.
Welcome back to the program. We're discussing physics, religion, the paranormal, all these things, and where they meet with our guest this hour, Tom Fusco. He's the author of Behind the Cosmic Veil, A New Vision of Reality, Merging Science, the Spiritual, and the Supernatural. There are so many directions that a conversation like this one could go, and yet we have so little time to do that. And so we will try and do the very best we can at canvassing all the relevant details, all the important data, and all the important points while we do have Tom with us here on the program. And Tom, I do want to say again, thank you for joining us tonight on the Graylian Report.
Thanks again. You're kind of phasing out a little bit, so something's odd going on with the sound.
Oh well, that's the bane of our existence here. When you broadcast from a bunker in the middle of the hollow earth, hopefully you can hear me okay now. How do I sound now, Tom?
Well, that sounded a lot better. Whatever was going on before it stopped, I guess maybe something non-local was going on.
Something non-local. Well, that very well could be the case indeed, I think.
I think Chris quit breathing heavy into the microphone like some kind of obscene caller.
Yes, indeed. Yes, well, maybe our production staff had something to do with that. But picking up where we left off before the before the last break, Tom, you know, you were talking about non-locality and some of the ways that this known scientific experiments can indicate for us that there seems to be something that is going on that is kind of beyond what we see physical, and as you said, beyond space-time. Quantum entanglement kind of illustrates this for us. And you also apply this to studying the paranormal. And one of the fundamental flaws that you outline in your book when it comes to people who are, for instance, psychic investigators or paranormal researchers is that when they go into an investigation of this sort of phenomenon, they kind of have this mindset that they are automatically dealing with ghosts, but spirits, you know, of the dead. You think that that is a pretty, maybe, if not dangerous, at very least, it's a impractical way to go about this sort of investigation. Why is that?
Well, I think the best parallel we can draw with that, Michael, is to look at a crime investigation team from a police force. And let's say there's a crime that's been committed, a person's been murdered. Let's say it was done with a gun. And the police force goes out there and investigates. It tries to figure out what's going on. Well, they're very specialized. Two departments in particular that I would think of is the criminology unit, for one. They want to know about the perpetrator. They want to know about who that person was, what their motivation was, why they wanted to murder that particular person at that particular time, so on and so forth. We parallel that with paranormal investigation, we would say that that's the spiritual end of it. People trying to figure out whether we're dealing with a deceased person who's trying to get someone's attention by throwing a pot across the room, or whether it's some sort of a demonic influence, or maybe it's a poltergeist activity, or all those types of things. And it's not to say that they're not valid considerations, but most of the paranormal mindset has those kinds of things intrinsically interwoven in their thinking and their analysis of what the evidence is. On the other side, what I want to be is the forensics team. I don't want to worry about who pulled the trigger and why. I want to know about the gun. I want to know how it's made. I want to know what its caliber is, what the tensile strength of the steel that it's made of, what kind of propellant it uses, how it killed the victim, the evidence of blood splatters, so on and so forth. It really doesn't matter to me who pulled the trigger and why. So when we make those kinds of separations, when we're looking at different types of evidence, particularly in the paranormal, it helps clarify our minds. and helps us see exactly what's going on. Give an example. It's very common, I'm sure everybody's heard about it, where many paranormal investigators experience difficulties with their electrical equipment.
Oh, yeah.
At the site of paranormal activity. And so many of them conclude, well, the spirits are draining energy from our batteries in order to manifest themselves physically. It seems like it kind of looks like, sounds like, reminds me of kind of logic that kind of makes sense on the surface. But when you stop and take a look at the physics and remove the spirit, let's say, okay, we're not talking about a spirit doing anything. Let's put that aside. And let's look at the phenomena itself. We find out that the physics for it just isn't there. We know that kind of thinking is based on Einstein's equation E equals mc squared, that matter and energy are two forms of the same thing and can be converted. But they forget to think about the actual implications of the variables in that equation. It takes an incredible amount of energy to make even the tiniest speck of matter. The entire output of the sun, the entire energy output of the sun is not enough to make a McDonald's cheeseburger. So if they are like saying they would detect a cold spot and say, well, gee, you know, a ghost is drawing thermal energy out of that spot to manifest physically, you wouldn't be talking about, you know, an area of 2 foot across where it dropped 10 or 20 degrees. You'd be talking about how many square miles have just dropped to absolute zero, negative 273 degrees centigrade, just to get the tiniest wisp of matter.
Right.
And, of course, we know, we who follow the UFO-type phenomenon, this same phenomenon is observed in certain UFO sightings, where this object, whatever they are, comes close to people, and suddenly their vehicles don't work anymore, their batteries are dead, the flashlights go bad. But nobody would ever dream that the UFO is draining batteries from a car in order to manifest.
Good point.
So when you start, you know, accumulating this evidence and trying to weed out all the distractions and look exactly at what's going on, at the very least, it reveals what can't be so. And so once you eliminate those things, you could begin to start thinking clearly about, well, what could this possibly be?
Elementary, my dear Watson.
You've got it. it's that same kind of a logic. Mm-hmm. So when we start weeding these types of preconceptions and these dogmas and these prejudices out, we begin to see, for example, that, well, let's say a disembodied voice. You and I are speaking to each other. We hear each other. The voice is the effect, and the physical cause is your vocal cords. At the sites of paranormal activity, they hear disembodied voices. We hear the effect, but there's no physical cause in contact with the effect. And so by scientific definition, we have an example of non-local causality. Now, if we stretch that one step further, and let's cross over the wall and go into quantum physics, our correlated photons, where we have that instantaneous transfer of information that changes the state of particle B, we have the exact same effect. We have a physical effect that we are observing with no physical cause. So when we do that, Mike, when we start looking at things that way, we come to a startling conclusion that whereas traditionally paranormal researchers have tried to explain the paranormal scientifically, the truth is that quantum physics itself is paranormal. The quantum entanglement effect is not a looks like, sounds like, reminds me of paranormal. It is paranormal.
It certainly is, you know, and I think this is where a lot of that problem between the Einsteinian approach to things, the relativistic view, versus the quantum view stems from. There's still, you know, heck, we talk about the dichotomy between science and religion. You know, there's plenty of dichotomy and disagreement between the various branches of science, and we certainly see that here too, because we can't explain everything. Even though we can observe it, we know it's there, we know it happens, but we can't explain what exactly is going on, you know? And in my opinion, your notion of there being something, it almost gets into the idea of the implicate order, David Bohm and some of his research, you know, the notion that there is something that transcends space-time, something that is maybe I would like to call in the, I think I referred to it the other day, as something in the superstrata of reality that, you know, kind of pre-exists what we perceive as three-dimensional beings as space and time, that is a causal influence on those observable effects. In other words, there's something that kind of unites them, like the ground between separate islands in a lake. We can't see anything but the islands coming out of the water, but if we dove underground, we'd be able to see that indeed the land is continuous beneath.
Yes, you're absolutely right. And this idea of a collection of information outside of space-time has gone by a number of different names throughout the ages. I mean, myself being very familiar with the Bible, in the Judaic tradition, what we're talking about is called the wisdom of God. If you read the Old Testament and you really study it, you'll see, my goodness, they're talking about a source of information that establishes a structure from which reality was constructed. In the Christian New Testament, this was called the Word of God. And God spoke the Word, let there be light, and it came into existence. It states that all things were made through that Word. It's been called infinite intelligence. It's been called cosmic conscience. David Bohm, that's a very important person, because he was one of the most prominent physicists of the 20th century. He called it implicate order. Mm-hmm. There are certain, I should go a step further with that. He said the implicate order, which existed outside of space-time, gives rise to explicate order, right, which is the world of space-time, matter, and energy to which we can observe and measure. There's another very good working theory that's out there now that the physicists who are working on it call the same thing configuration space.
Hmm. And what exactly does that entail, that definition?
Yes. When Einstein was trying to balance his unified field equations, he was trying to combine the four forces into a single force mathematically. He could never do it. Well, a fella came along tried to help him out named Theodore Calusa. And Calusa just tried one day, he just got an idea, let me add a fifth coordinate. Not just the four coordinates of space, three spatial dimensions and one temporal dimension, but a fifth coordinate that isn't physical, exists outside of space-time. And he worked the equations and then subtracted that fifth non-physical coordinate, boom, the equation's balanced.
Hmm. Interesting. You know, and that seems to be the situation, is that the progression of knowledge is not that, well, Einstein had it, or, well, such and such has it. It's that, you know, these theories are constantly, you know, being expanded upon and being revised and being rebuilt. You know, some people now are trying to say that, well, you know, the next big thing is going to be string theory or this or that, and that's going to completely derail, you know, Einstein's, you know, perception of things is relative and relativity. I don't know that it's necessarily, well, this person's right or this person's right. It just seems that, you know, and this is kind of the scope of your book, is trying to find a grand theory of everything, as they call it. I don't know that there is really one person's perspective that is an entirely theory of everything. You know, I think it's a combination of all of these elements, and that, you know, there's certainly something right in every little area that you look. Now, in your book, you also get into the realm of religion And we talk about how, you know, although I think science is kind of the practical application of you know, testable theories and methodology to understanding the nature of reality, before we had the complex, you know, systems of today that we utilize in scientific processes and the scientific method, religion at one time and spirituality sought to do the same thing. Is there still wisdom to be found in a spiritual approach to understanding reality in that way in the modern era?
Well, to me, there certainly is. And again, we have to, what we have to try to do, Micah, is to come up with a conceptual model that, given the same elements of that model, the same definitions, the same terminologies, the same way of looking at things, that we can apply that model across all these disciplines and shed light on areas in those particular disciplines that have so far defied explanation. So when we're talking about religious faith, for me, what I have to start with is a physical foundation. And one of the things that I include in that, again, I have to go back to Einstein's thinking. And you have to understand, people are not aware of a certain undercurrent in modern physics that is part of the motivation behind the way that they report their findings and even what they investigate, is that there's a movement in modern physics, an undercurrent, to try to discredit Einstein.
Oh, yeah.
And there's a couple reasons why. When Einstein came on the scene, for a brief period of time, science was owned by the relativists, the people who saw the universe in the way that Einstein described it as relativity. Before his time, science was in the possession of the Newtonians. And I think you follow what I'm saying.
Oh, yes, absolutely. It's kind of cyclical.
Well, not too long after that, science became under command of the quantists. And there was a big rift between the relativists and the quantists. The quantum physicists said that the world, by its very nature, was unpredictable. Einstein said no. He said, quantum physics is impressive, but God does not play dice. Mm. So one of the things that Einstein created problems for them is, for example, given the current state of the universe in the vicinity of our solar system, if we were to be able to understand and acquire every speck of information about the state of reality the way it is in our local part of the universe, Einstein said we could say with absolute certainty what the weather is going to be like in Dallas, Texas, 7 days from now. The quantum physicist says no, that because of the random nature of the universe, it's impossible to know what will the weather be like in Dallas 7 days from now. Not because we're incapable of finding the data, but because the nature of the universe is just simply that way. So if you side with Einstein, you would look at the quantum physicists and say, no, your work isn't done. There's a big body of data here and of knowledge which you're completely ignorant of and you're completely missing. But the quantum physicists would say, oh, no, Mr. Einstein, our work is done.
Indeed.
If you follow what I mean. There was another thing that Einstein maintained, which the quantum physicists hate. And that is, and I'll tell you, folks, if you ever get a chance to get Einstein's writings, not synopsises from other people or paraphrases, get the writings of Einstein himself and read it. When I tell you the beauty of this, if you could imagine physics poetry, the purity and the simplicity of his writing is beautiful. I've never seen anything else like it. But one of the things he said, and this is remarkable, that the final judge of any physical theory is human experience.
Uh-huh.
And the quantum physicists hate that.
Einstein seemed to have one foot in the mystical, didn't he?
Einstein was, he was a man who was able to gather an incredible amount of information, organize it, and translate it, transmute it in his mind in a pictorial image, and be able to hold that image in his mind long term and be able to reckon with it. There was something very different about his brain. But anyway, it, laying that foundation, Micah, now we go back to your original question with religion. We have human experiences that for ages we have called religious. And we all know what that means on some level. And I'm not even anywhere near talking about different aspects of different religions. I'm just talking about that spiritual aspect. And so what we have to do is try to find physical arguments, indisputable, irrefutable physical arguments that defend and prove Einstein's premise that the final judge of every physical theory is human experience. And here's one of them from the spiritual end. And I think your audience will really appreciate what I'm saying here. The first thing is, let's talk about a 1957 Chevy. It seems odd, but we're going to use a 57 Chevy. I like it.
I don't think he'd mind.
And I'll make it a red one, too. I particularly favor that.
Oh, those are great.
There is, Micah, there is no natural process in the universe. I don't care where it is. In the farthest reaches of the universe, in the farthest planet, in the middle of black holes, wherever you pick, there is no natural process that will ever self-assemble a 1957 Chevy.
Indeed. And you...
It truly is impossible. So if a 1957 Chevy is not a natural occurrence, a natural construction, what then is it? Well, there's only one question left. There's one answer left. It's supernatural.
Yes, by that definition, it certainly is, isn't it?
That's right. Now, follow what I've been saying. I didn't get lost in the religion, and I didn't get lost in the philosophy, and I didn't get lost in the morality. Not that any of those things are not worthy.
Sure.
They are of great value, but what I've done is purposely took chains and bound myself to a fixed point. So I can't go from here. Hmm. I have to say what I've got to say from this spot, because this is what we need, is this kind of a viewpoint. So if the 57 Chevy, by definition, is a supernatural creation, and I could argue that with Richard Dawkins and Stephen Hawking and all the atheists till the end of time, they will not be able to refute me in this logic.
You know, I like it. Hey, you know, Tom, we're up on a break. This will be a short one before our last final segment of the hour. When we come back, we'll dig into this a little bit deeper and what you call in your book super geometry. Again, I don't want to give away too much. Ideally, we want folks to go out and pick up a copy of this fantastic book. I've really enjoyed reading it. It's called Behind the Cosmic Veil, A New Vision of Reality, Merging Science, the Spiritual, and the Supernatural. Our guest is Thomas P. Fusco. And when we come back here on the Graylian Report, we will delve into even stranger mysteries regarding space and time and all that. Here on the Graylian Report, I'm Micah Hanks. We'll be back right after this.
have some fun? Maybe get a little bit of insight. Get a lay of the land. Want to know what's really going on? Do what I do. Listen to Future Theater. It airs every Saturday, 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern, on the InceptionRadioNetwork.com. We'll see you there.
As a parent, you can't help but look at your child and wonder what the future holds. You may dream about the possibility of your son or daughter becoming a professional athlete or a renowned heart surgeon. But while you're dreaming, consider this. The odds that your child will be diagnosed with autism are 1 in 110. Knowing the signs of autism and getting an early diagnosis could make a world of difference to your child and to you. To learn the signs, visit AutismSpeaks.org. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council.
Join the program by phone, call 828-398-4886. Skype users can reach the program by calling Skype ID Graylian Report. And now, from hundreds of miles beneath terra firma, in the depths of the hollow earth, live from the Graylian bunker, it's Micah Hanks.
Welcome back to the program. This is the Graylian Report, and I'm Micah Hanks. Joining me by phone tonight, we are speaking with Tom Fusco about his new book, Behind the Cosmic Veil. And next hour, we'll also be touching on some newsworthy information before we, of course, finish up this week's edition of the Graylian Report. But before we get to all that, I do want to bring back onto the program our fantastic guest. We're discussing all different kinds of things, and it's kind of a melting pot of different areas of interest that are on the table tonight with our guest. When we left during the last break, we were talking about, essentially the idea of what is created, what can be created, how this relates to the paranormal and religion and even to science, especially to science. Many people have put these kinds of ideas forth, especially Albert Einstein. And something I want to ask you, Tom, at this point, and we only have about 5 minutes left here, but when it comes to what you call in your book supergeometry, what exactly does this entail, and how can we apply this to kind of a theory of everything? I think that's the goal here, is to try and have some sort of criteria by which we can judge and measure better, if not in totality, all things in the universe. What you call supergeometry is one attempt at that. I do like your ideas on that. Tell us a little bit about that here.
Well, to put it in its very simplest terms, supergeometry is a way to describe this superphysical information that we've been talking about. It's beyond the physical. So it's, since it's a structure, it's a matrix, it's a form, it is a form of geometry, but it is above normal geometry. So that's where the word supergeometry comes from.
Hmm.
Micah, if you don't mind, I just wanted, if I could, just to finish real quick the idea that I was expanding on.
Oh, by all means, please.
With the mind.
Sure.
Because that's very, very important. The conclusion that I was coming to when we were talking about the religious aspect and religious experience is that if we are the only ones that can make a supernatural creation here in space-time, that means by definition we're supernatural beings. We have to be. This is why evolutionists have over 40 different theories that compete, that none of them can agree to, even a majority can agree to try to explain where man's mind came from.
Mm-hmm.
They just can't put a finger on it. And so when we are able to make those kinds of strong foundational arguments that are perfectly logical and consistent with a scientific method of reasoning, now we have a foundation on which we can build. And I did want to add one other thing that also relates with what you were just asking me about the human mind. And this is what, if you understand this, if you get this, this will make your hair stand up on end. No physical system and no component within it can exceed the laws by which it is constructed. Everything within that physical system must conform to the physical laws which dictate the nature and behavior of the entire system and everything in it. Well, in the physical universe, our human brains are a component of that universe. And therefore, our human brains are constructed along the exact same lines as the physical laws that govern the greater universe, even though we don't understand those laws completely. That means, Micah, that anything that the human mind can image has to be possible physically.
You know, I've always thought that too. You know, almost, and for me, I think it's more of kind of an intuitive, almost a visceral kind of thing. But ever since a young age, I've always thought that, you know, in terms of the way that, you know, especially if you just think about probability, in terms of the incredible, incredible variety that must exist throughout the universe, virtually anything our minds could conceive can, and in all probability, does exist in some way, shape, or form. And that's
what we've always been saddled with, Micah, is a religious expression of that, a spiritual expression of that, a philosophical expression of that. Now we have a sound, solid, irrefutable scientific definition of it.
Well, I'll tell you, your book, you know, is really taking a leap in the direction toward better understanding all this. I could talk with you for hours, and unfortunately the clock has caught us. Tom, your book, Behind the Cosmic Veil, it's a new vision of reality, merging science, the spiritual, and the supernatural. Tell folks how they can find your book and learn more about your work.
Yeah, everything is going to be able to be accessed through the website. It's www.cosmicveil.com. And you can find more information about the book, read articles. You can order it directly from our e-store, where you'll get the fastest service and the best price. You can also find it at Amazon.com, Barnes & Noble, and other locations. But if you buy it from us directly, you'll be a hero in our books.
Indeed. And give them that website one more time, please.
Yes, it's www.cosmicveil.com.
Excellent. Tom, I hope you will come back on the Graylian Report again sometime. I know that this is, you know, although this may be a one of the best statements on how to perceive reality that I've seen in a long time, like all things, it will continue to grow. This will just be a catalyst for future insight. And as we continue to undertake new insights and understandings, I hope you'll join us again on the program and lend your insight into the strange nature of the universe.
I'll be happy to come back, Micah. Thank you so much.
Oh, our pleasure. And I've already told you, I'll say it again here for all to hear, do stay in touch and let me know about your ongoing exploits and in interests. I certainly want to stay in touch with you about that. Okay, Tom?
Yes, sir.
All right, my friend. Have a great evening. And that wraps up our interview with Tom Fusco. Boy, he's a fantastic guy. I could listen to him talk. He's got a very soothing voice, just a gentle soul altogether. And he's got some brilliant ideas. And I don't toss endorsements half-heartedly. I recommend Behind the Cosmic Veil wholeheartedly. And I know that the listeners of this program would be the type that would enjoy that. When we come back, more strange news. What's the media been up to this week? There's been so much bad news going on. Is there something more to it? And what can we make of the madness here on the Graylian Report? Well, maybe nothing, but we'll give it our best shot. I'm Micah Hanks. We'll be back right after this.
Hey guys, Jamie Havoc in here for UFO Mag. Do you want to receive the best writing there is in ufology? The best writers, editors, and flat out the best magazine that ufology can offer. If so, I highly recommend UFO Magazine. You can check it out at ufomag.com. And if you mention that you heard this on radio, you can get 6 issues for $19.95. Check it out, ufomag.com. Don't miss out. And keep up to date on the hottest topics in ufology. For UFO Mag, this is Jamie Habkin.
For most of us, chocolate is a guilty pleasure. Come on, admit it. You've got a sweet tooth just like the rest of us. But if I told you that eating chocolate was actually really good for your health and happiness, you'd probably say I was in La La Land. Hey, I wouldn't argue. Here's why. Every batch of the fine handcrafted chocolates at La La Land Organics Raw Chocolate is made from scratch, using organic, fair trade, and 100% natural ingredients. From the first bite, you'll know you're enjoying true quality, and the heart shape isn't the only way you'll feel the love. In fact, every chocolate from La La Land Organics is made by Melody Dawn Germain herself, and according to her own special recipe. You'll be enjoying Ecuadorian heirloom cacao in every bite, along with a selection of wholesome herbs and superfood supplements that not only make La La Land Organics delicious, but really good for your health and happiness. They're all natural, gluten-free, and no dairy, soy, or refined sugars are included, which help them boost your energy, reduce stress, and promote longevity. And as if healthy organic chocolates didn't remove the guilt factor enough, Melody ships all her orders in reusable, food-grade, non-BPA containers designed to eliminate toxic residue and cut down on environmental waste. Be sure and visit Melody's website at www.mdgnewmedia.com. That website again is mdgnewmedia.com. Just click chocolate in the toolbar at the top of the page. You can't miss it. And while you're there, you can see a full list of the ingredients that will be sure to put a smile on your face. And I promise, it's guilt-free. La La Land Organics Raw Chocolate. Why wait? That website again is mdgnewmedia.com.
Fact. This is the Graylian Report with your host, Micah Hanks.
Thank you, Dick Oakley. Welcome back to the third and final hour of this week's broadcast of the Graylian Report, bringing you weird news, anomalies, and exopolitics from beyond the fringe. I'm Micah Hanks, joined in studio by producer extraordinaire, the living dead himself, Chris Hayes, our producer, who looks like he is starving for brains right now.
Well, I'm starving.
I fed you already.
Oh, no, yeah, that's right. I'm not hungry at all. I don't know why I said that.
God, you're going to end up stealing some poor little potato face, and then we're going to be in all kinds of trouble.
I could use some more.
You always do this, Chris.
Chris, don't do it. Hey, who was that other voice? Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, our engineer here is joining us. No, we're not going to give Matt a hard time this week. We're going to be kind to the man who's always working hard to make sure the program sounds good, Mr. Matt Oakley.
Because he's got kind eyes.
You have kind eyes. Yeah, somebody didn't want to kill this guy. The Hadals like this one. Why do they like him? They don't like us?
I don't know.
We always get the bad rap. They always like Matt.
Man, that's crap. Nobody ever likes me.
Have you ever seen that film, Downfall, you know, about Hitler and the last hours leading up to the fall?
Yeah.
Okay, well, you know, somebody needs to do a version of that where Hitler finds out that Matt Oakley is the favorite of the three of us.
Those videos are so great.
They're hilarious. I've heard Rush Limbaugh talking about that stuff before on his program. I've heard everybody talk about that. And speaking of Rush Limbaugh, boy, people are rolling their eyes out there now. No. That's not the direction we're going right now. No, I do want to touch on some recent news, however, because this is something that means a lot to us here on the program. I'm going to put it to you as bluntly as I possibly can. The media is trying to control your mind. What was it? Was it last week that we did a top 10 signs that you are under mind control?
Yeah.
What do we got, by the way? Do we have a top 10 for this week, Matt?
We do. We have top 10 signs your house may be haunted.
You know, I spent some time this afternoon in a haunted house. And let me just tell you, folks, looking ahead, we've been talking about some of the guests that are going to be coming on the program. Do we have a guest for next week? We don't, I don't think. But you know, you never know what may happen with this program, though. I mean, from week to week, sometimes things get pretty interesting. We try not to book guests all the time because, you know, we're not, this isn't one of those programs we want to sit around and this week our guest and we're going to sit around for 3 hours and talk about such and such with such and such, you know.
Well, I've got a woman who claims she's the reincarnated version of Leonardo da Vinci.
Whoa, we do have a guest for next week.
Yeah, she and the reason she says so is because she can write backwards but not at the same time as writing forwards, so I find her claims a little shaky.
That's interesting. Well, I'm glad you're at least getting some fan mail. You know, I mean, aside from, you know, these vicious messages from, you know, the underworld dwellers.
I have yet to get fan mail, actually. Well, here's I get informative mail, but not fan mail. I mean, if you'd like to send me fan mail, my email address is producer@graylionreport.com, and I am, in fact, quite fetching.
He's being serious, folks. You know, there are email addresses. You know, the one that we have at the website is info@graylionreport, but you can reach Chris, our producer, and it's easy to remember, producer@graylionreport.com. And guess what? Matt Oakley, the engineer's email address is?
It's
kindeyes@graylionreport.com. but it's kind_eyes, and the eyes is with a Z. Yeah, yes.
kindeyes@graylionreport.com. Oh, Lord. No, okay. engineer@graylionreport.com. But look, speaking of fan mail, we did just get this one from Anne Marie. She says, "Hi, Micah, Matt, and Chris. I really enjoy the Graylion Report and the hard work you all put into it. If you ever find yourselves in Arizona, a very weird, wild place, at the best of times, the adult beverages are on me. Hey, guys, we're going to Arizona. We're going to have to do a live broadcast from Arizona. What do you think?"
And actually, I need a drink.
Well, Matt, you know, go. You can walk down the hall and go get one if you want.
We offered you a drink, but you said you were going to toast us with water.
He was going to toast us. Well, you know, I've got a big old
league. Those words have never left my mouth before.
They just happened.
I've got my bottle of Icelandic glacial water. Actually, you know what?
But it's right next to your glass of Merlot.
I
ran out of wine.
We do. Right.
You could always tap me on the shoulder, which is, oddly enough, I think having something to do with something you want to talk about, Matt.
You know, the only reason I allow you guys. No, hold on. Let me tell you. The only reason I allow you guys to drink wine on this program is, well, there are a few reasons. A, because web broadcasts are not moderated by the FCC. Two, we are technically below ground and actually in the district of you know, greater Haydalopolis, where we are, okay? And three, because Chris is the boss, and really he makes the decisions. So anyway.
And quite frankly, I like things that are a proxy for blood.
Yes, I think that's really what it gets down to. But looking ahead, like we were doing a moment ago, December 6th, we're going to be having Mac Maloney on the program to talk with us about his new book, which we have right here. It's called UFOs in Wartime. I'm very interested in reading that. And then, now looking even further ahead, now Matt's going to be doing a top 10 signs your house is haunted tonight. We like to get top 10s in. We've been doing one just about every week for the last several weeks. We don't always get to them. When we can, we do. But we are going to be doing a broadcast. I don't think it's too soon to go ahead and put this out there. We are going to be doing a live broadcast on January 10th from a real haunted house, folks. That's serious. We're going to be live at the Reynolds Mansion in beautiful, sunny western North Carolina. Of course, it's going to be dark and bleak and probably very cold when we do our live broadcast from that location. It's going to be January 10th. Billy Sanders, the owner, has worked out a very special circumstance where we'll be able to do a live broadcast. And yes, we will. My head hurts when I even think about that term, ghost hunting. We will hold what I would like to call a vigil there.
Do you prefer ghosting?
Yes, we're going to be ghosting all night. No, I think there may be spirits involved, but I'll tell you, in truth, we're going to do a broadcast. We're going to talk about the history of that place. Very seldom do you find a single location that has so much history. And yes, folks, there are stories of ghosts. You know, we're not going to go around with our little meters and try and prove or disprove this or that, you know, like you see on television. But, you know, if anything strange should happen.
Wait, what was that? Did you hear that?
Are you being touched? You're being touched, aren't you? You know, speaking of, okay, hold on, that reminds me of something else. And I said we were also going to get to some news, but go ahead and mark your calendars for that Tuesday, January the 10th, when we do our live broadcast from a haunted mansion It's actually now a bed and breakfast, but that is going to be here on the Grailian Report. So that's looking ahead. Then there'll be more surprises to come in the coming weeks. But speaking of recent news, again, this is a program that people, I think, listen to so that they can get away from all the crap that's going on in the mainstream media. And like I said earlier, the media really is trying to control your mind. Evidence of that, if you want to see that, just look at the latest GOP presidential polls. Okay. Or for that matter, look at the recent, presidential approval rating polls for President Barack Obama. Various factions of the media take great delight in trying to steer the public's interest toward one candidate or another. And we see great examples of that in the GOP polls. And that's why I always choose on this program to talk about Ron Paul a good bit. It's not because I'm some fervent Ron Paul supporter. I have supported Ron Paul in the past. I like a lot of his ideas. There are a few things I disagree with him about. Do I think he'd do a better job than a lot of the people who are in the executive branch today? Yes, I do. But now I'll tell you, aside from, I'm not even just coming short of putting an endorsement behind the guy. I'm telling you straight up, I'm not going to endorse Ron Paul on this program. If I did endorse Ron Paul, you wouldn't know about it. And the reason why is because I'm not going to put my ideas out in terms of political ideology here. I mean, I may talk about certain things in that vein from time to time, but the point here is not whether or not I like Ron Paul. I choose to focus on Ron Paul because repeatedly we see the way that the media tries to steer around his significance in the polls. And there's a fantastic report that came out, okay, I guess this was actually just today. And we're going to get to that in a moment. And we're going to look at a few other things, too. But before we get to that, I do want to say one thing. Because on this program, we try to steer things away from the sort of stuff that the media is steering us towards and inundating with us all the time, which is often really not very friendly, happy news. One such not very friendly, happy news story that we've been hearing for a lot of people too much about is this Penn State circumstance. Okay? And about this Coach Sandusky and all this, these allegations of sexual misconduct. I think there are something like 40 counts right now being leveled against him of sexual misconduct with young boys. And of course, Paterno, the head coach, and his apparent inability or whatever it was that led to him not reporting to authorities reports that Sandusky had been allegedly witnessed engaging in sexual misconduct in a locker room. I mean, it's been absolutely horrific. And I saw a report that came out earlier this week talking about Sandusky and how the coach's autobiography was still in the campus bookstore up there at Penn State. And the book, I don't know whether to laugh or cry when I see something like this. The book is called Touched.
I can tell you what to do with it. Just laugh. You can't help it.
It made me mad. And I tell you what I said when I saw that. I said, the dadgum follow-up needs to be called Punched. Because that's what a lot of Americans would like to do to that guy right
that'd
now.
That'd be kind of like, aside from Mein Kampf, the sequel, like Hitler's memoirs being Solutions.
Yeah, right. No, I mean, truly, though, think about this, the sick... I'm trying to measure my words here. There was an interview with the guy earlier today. And in the interview, he was asked if he was sexually attracted to boys. And his response was something along the lines of, well, I have touched boys on the leg before, but never in a sexualized way or in a way that I felt sexually aroused. He admitted to showering with these boys and said, I shouldn't have done that. And when it came to these allegations of what actually happened in the locker rooms, he said, well, yeah, sure, we'd shower together and horse around from time to time. Oh, I'd just horse around in the locker room naked with minors. My God. It's absolutely horrific how something like this, the kind of oversight that would have allowed something like this to continue. And I know everybody else is talking about this, but I'm sorry, I've got to use the soapbox here for just a minute because truly, 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 this is one of the most disturbing stories I have seen in a damned long time. What about the athletic program or anything else up there at that university was so important that this information was withheld from law enforcement for so long? What the hell was going on? Whose great idea was it to conduct any investigation themselves, whether that be Paterno or his superiors or anyone else who he allegedly reported this information to? That just makes me sick. And then this SOB puts a book out, and it's called Touched. You know, maybe Kicked in the Teeth will be the sequel. I don't know. If you have thoughts about that, you're always welcome to join us by phone, 828-398-4886, or you can call us via Skype at Skype ID Graylian Report, or even sound off with a text message, 828-367-7201, to send us a text message at any time. And all that information, if I'm talking too fast for you, people tell me I do that from time to time, you can visit www.graylianreport.com. And on the right-hand column at the top of the page, you'll see a little button that says Graylian Report on the radio. Click that, and all the call-in information is available right there, too.
Well, you know, Micah, I can tell you, you know, back to the Sandusky thing, as a school, or, yeah, a scholastic athlete for 7 years in...
You're talking about yourself now, right?
Yes, myself. In three different sports, I can tell you that... I experienced absolutely 0.0% horsing around in the showers after practice or after a competition.
You know, I mean, it's so funny because he's trying to justify what he did. There was never at any time ever anything like this. I'm sorry, you know, a grown man doesn't horse around in a shower with minors.
And if I understand right, they're not even like high school age minors. They're like,
the boy
you could slip.
The no, you couldn't. And that's actually one thing that he said. I think he'd actually said, if I'm understanding what he was talking about correctly during this interview, Sandusky claimed that one of the witnesses had actually turned the showers on and was sliding around. We were all just having a great time, just playing.
Naked.
You know that is so disturbing.
And
yes,
also my coaches. Never, ever. They didn't even come in the locker room. They had their own special coach's locker room in which they showered.
That's right. You know, and the thing is that the minor in question, in this alleged report, you know, who the witness claims that he had witnessed, you know, Sandusky with, was supposed to have been about 10 years old. Now, Sandusky's lawyer says that they think that they've identified this individual and that the individual would have told a very different story. But, you know, to me, this entire thing just keeps getting more and more and more and more disturbing. So I apologize to you now, oh dear listenership of ours, for having to go off on a foray. I had to sound off there for a moment. When we come back, we'll get more into what I initially intended to talk about, and that is media suppression. Is the media trying to control your mind, let alone, you know, the Heart Project or secret government elitists who are seeking to control the world with a new world order? Or who the hell knows, maybe the media's under their control. We'll try and make sense of this madness when we come back. I'm Micah Hanks, it's the Graylian Report.
The 9/11 memorial is for the 343 firefighters who didn't make it.
For my husband, who died that day.
And the first responders who saved my life.
Because the best of humanity can overcome the worst hate.
This is Robert De Niro. This year, as we open the 9/11 Memorial in New York City, we ask that you join us to honor, remember, and reunite. To learn more or to reserve your visit, go to 911memorial.org.
Brought to you by the 9/11 Memorial and the Ad Council.
Ranger Station.
Yeah, hi. I'd like to report a bear sighting in the forest.
Uh-huh.
1 second I'm having a smoke. Next thing I know, I'm face-to-face with Smokey Bear.
Wow.
And he told me it only takes one spark to start a wildfire.
Did you know 9 out of 10 wildfires are caused by humans?
I had no idea.
That's why Smokey's famous and you're not. If you see someone in danger of starting a wildfire, step in and make a difference. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council. Learn more at SmokeyBear.com.
Only you can prevent wildfires.
We'll be right back.
from the high mountains of Appalachia, it's the Graylian Report with Micah Hanks. To join the program by phone, call 828-398-4886. Skype users can reach the program by calling Skype ID Graylian Report. And now, from hundreds of miles beneath terra firma, in the depths of the hollow earth, live from the Graylian Bunker, it's Micah Hanks.
You know, once every generation or so, something happens that is so groundbreaking, so influential, that the world at large has no choice but to stand up and take notice, by God. And that thing tonight is the Graylian Report. So thank you for joining us. I'm Micah Hanks, along with Chris Hayes and our good friend, the Reverend, back here on the board. Hearing the soul-satisfying sounds of Rat Jackson, our dear friends Will and Kurt Arledge. You know, a couple of years ago, I was doing a broadcast here at our hometown radio station in Asheville, North Carolina, WWNC, and I had Kurt Arledge join me on the air. I think that was Bellshare weekend, actually. Kurt is also the drummer of the group Rat Jackson, who was providing us with comeback music during the last segment. Fantastic stuff, as always. Don't you think, Matt?
Oh, I love Rat Jackson, man. One of my favorite local acts around here.
Excellent. Thank you so much. Now you can go back to sleep, bud. But anyway.
Oh, thanks.
I'm sorry. But anyway, you know, a new poll today, and this is the story that I wanted to get to. A new poll is showing what is being called a four-way tie in Iowa. Iowa, of course, with an election year coming up, it's a pivotal state. And guess who they are saying has now moved into the top tier? Now, again, real quick, before people start complaining and saying, you know, why aren't they talking about something paranormal? I want to hear about something weird. We're going to get to some weird stuff.
I think you're more likely to get angry emails saying, why do you think we sound like that?
Right?
Like, oh, is that what you think of us? You think we're just a bunch of mouth breathers living in our mom's basement? Like,
No.
I want UFOs, and I want ghosts, and I want to see the Bigfoots, and I want to know if it's real or not, and I don't care about the president.
My daddy says the Bigfoot is not real. My daddy.
Your daddy's wrong.
My daddy says that if a Bigfoot comes into the wood and they talk to you, you will take it and you will like it.
Is that what your daddy said?
That's what my daddy told me. My daddy said, you know, a little guy, you know, that comes up from time to time. What's his name? Kubri. Yeah. He's a funny little guy. He's one of the Hadels folks, keeping in mind. I was doing my best to try and mock a Hadel speaking English, but anyway. Oh, we've heard enough Hadels trying to speak English and make death threats for one night, I think. But anyway, no. And I don't think the people out there in the listenership sound like that. And here's why, because I'm making fun of the people who don't belong to our listenership. I know that the people who listen to this program are, by God, smart enough and conscientious enough to understand exactly why it is that we are touching on these things when it comes to the media, okay? You know, and actually, speaking of our thoughts about the media, you know, Ryan writes us that I agree that the media is trying to control our minds, and that's why I choose not to watch anything on cable. I prefer to get my news from alternative publications. Well, God bless you for endorsing an alternative news source like the Graylian Report, because we certainly consider ourselves an independent source of information for folks out there. But anyway, that said, I do want to get to this story right here. Ron Paul has allegedly moved into the top tier in what is called a four-way tie in Iowa. The Iowa caucuses are just 7 weeks away, but Republican voters in the nation's first presidential nominating state seem as torn as ever. As ever over the GOP field, at least. Now, many people, of course, are going to take issue with this. I've already put it out earlier, and I've had folks, you know, commenting on the fact that it was indeed a Bloomberg poll. But I think that makes it more significant in a lot of ways, and here's why. A new Bloomberg poll of likely caucus participants shows a four-way tie in Iowa, with Representative Ron Paul joining, get this, Mitt Romney, Newt Gingrich, and Herman Cain, who's been lambasted by the media recently over, you know, his own allegations of sexual misconduct. It wasn't quite anything like what's been going on at Penn State with regard to Herman Cain. I don't think I have to go into what people are saying about Herman Cain. I think it's already on everybody's mind right now. Underscoring the uncertainty in the race, 60% of respondents said that they would be persuaded to back someone other than their first choice for the nomination. The poll, conducted between the 10th and 12th of November by the West Des Moines-based firm Seltzer & Company, shows Kane in the lead with 20%. Now get this. Ron Paul is number two at 19%. Romney wins 18% support, and then Newt Gingrich, who has been picking up since Rick Perry's flub during that that debate last week. Indeed, Gingrich came in at 17%. The margin of error is 4.4%. Now, the reason I think that it's significant that it's Bloomberg that's addressing this poll is because it's these mainstream news sources, again, which I would consider Bloomberg one of, that typically like to undermine Ron Paul and any role that he plays. Time and time again, I've seen not one, not two, I mean, I've seen probably at least three news sources show information on their screens regarding polls. Ron Paul's name will be displayed, and they'll read around him. They'll read everyone but Ron Paul's name. Jon Stewart on The Daily Show did a similar segment talking about it. And again, it's not that we're trying to throw an endorsement to Ron Paul. What it is, hey, why is it that the media completely overlooks this guy? What about this individual is so unsavory to them? I don't think that it's Ron Paul per se that they find unsavory. I think what it is that they want to focus on the candidates that are being driven toward the forefront, you know. And that may not even just be the GOP. That could be in other areas too. The media drives anything that they want to be news, and the rest of it falls to the wayside. And that's why alternative and independent news is so important. Because sometimes it's the only place where you're going to get the stuff that is unfiltered. Everything that appears on the mainstream news sources, you know, the stations like CNN, MSNBC, Fox News, all these, you can guarantee that there's going to be a good degree of filtering that goes on. I won't name names. I'll even tell you this. I have a friend who's a very well-known conspiracy author, and he was invited to do a interview on a very well-known radio program that deals with paranormal subjects. Okay. And this individual told me that one night he was coming on the program to discuss a book that had just come out, and before they would allow him on this radio program, and again, this is a pretty widely listened to, nationally syndicated radio program that he was going to be discussing his book on, the individual told me, before I could take the air, we had a telephone conference, and I was told not to mention anything. I could not say anything detrimental about the Bush administration. I couldn't say anything about this. I couldn't say anything about 9/11, and I couldn't say anything about that. And I said, well, what did you do? And he said, well, I just didn't talk about those subjects. You know, what could I do? But, you know, I mean, this sort of thing, I think, really happens more than people are aware of. And so, again, I think that the point here that I'm trying to drive home is that independent news sources, they may not always be the way to go. I mean, all of us, I think, turn to whatever station, you know, and have that on in our car. Now, I will tell you this. One station I like to keep on in my car is actually a listener-powered public radio station. But I kind of flip back and forth between that and a Fox News station that's here in the Asheville area, which I happened to work for there for years. But, I mean, I'm telling you, I've worked in so many different areas and with so many different kind of groups, and despite my own rather centrist leanings, can you lean toward the center? I lean kind of toward, you know, the center. Doesn't that mean you're standing straight up? I don't know. Anyway, you know, but coming from different angles and looking at things from all different angles like I have, I've seen the best and I've seen the worst, I think. And what I'm seeing right now is that it's pretty amazing that despite the fact that the media wants to try and steer people's attention towards certain candidates, Ron Paul is nonetheless managing to come in not, you know, third or fourth. He's number two behind Herman Cain in this recent Bloomberg poll. And the story that I'm reading right now, I'm looking at this right here, CBS News reported this earlier today. So that's pretty significant to me. And I think that that's worthy of discussion here for that very reason. Because, you know what, if there are indeed elements of control and this falls under the idea of conspiracy theory, well, it's pretty obvious that there are elements out there right in plain sight. The mainstream media, you don't get any more in plain sight than on every mainstream news station on, you know, on cable television here in the United States. But if they are indeed trying to subversively control the way that people think and view popular you know, opinion on matters and potential, you know, political candidates and things like that, that's not a conspiracy. You know, it's pretty obvious. And if anything, I think that there are probably facts that back up that this is exactly what goes on. There are newsmen. There are people who have written books about this sort of thing. And what the evidence shows is that, indeed, yes, public opinion is often, you know, steered towards a rather filtered message that is put out by these media sources. That's not a conspiracy theory, in my opinion. If you've got facts to back up something, no matter how crazy it sounds, it is conspiracy fact. And a lot of the time, people don't disagree with what they see on their favorite news station. And so they don't question that. But the thing is that, you know, this is the whole thing, the Hegelian dialectic, you know, that sort of is put together. You know, people are kind of split apart ideologically in the United States and tried to steer towards left and right. The news stations aren't truly fair and balanced. They tend to be skewed pretty hard one direction or another. And people will gravitate towards which side that they like the best, and they're not going to question a lot of the crap that station puts out because they agree with the fundamental ideology, maybe. And therefore, when bad news is reported, or if good news is overlooked altogether, they're not going to say that much about it, you know? And it's a difficult thing, but what I challenge people to try and do is to try and step back and take a look at things for what they are, you know, put your own feelings about the matter aside and try and come to a good determination about what is and what is not, you know, and try and find news sources that will provide information that may not be so convenient and conventional and, you know, the kind of thing that these mainstream stations would like to try and carry and run across their little 24/7 news ticker at the bottom of the page. Most of this 24/7 news ticker crap, oh my gosh, you know. It's like non-news all day just for the sake of reporting it because you know you love it. And it is. It has become a way of life in the United States today. Has it not? Tell me I'm wrong. Tell me I'm wrong, you know?
You're not.
I don't think I am.
Not at all.
And again, if we want to back that up with some sort of evidence, if I'm wrong, tell me why we have 24-hour news stations. Do we have to have 24-hour news stations? What is really that newsworthy? Now we're going to have a segment on how you can save energy this winter. You know, that's not news. I mean, that might be human interest. That might be something that is of interest and even of use to the populace, but that's not breaking news. Breaking news at the top of every hour. Well, is there breaking news at the top of every hour? You know?
No, but you know what? If there's not, there will be, because we're going to make it happen.
Who's going to make it happen?
All of us. Our demand for there being salacious, you know, new things, new stimulus coming at us every minute of every day, every hour, you know, it's
entertainment is what it is.
Well,
it's like,
yeah, it's entertainment, but
we're addicted to it.
It's so seductive for these news corporations, and it's so hard for them to not, you know, provide what we all clearly are chomping at the bit for.
And I, you know what the sad thing is, though, Chris? I'm no different, man. I wake up every morning, and usually the first website I go to is dailygrail.com. And then I go to, because I get up pretty early, and usually here on the East Coast, the Anomalist hasn't updated their news stories, but the Anomalist is a... It's a news source if you like paranormal and fringe stuff. But I go to the Daily Grail, which kind of has a good mix of all different kinds of things. and then I go usually to the Drudge Report after that. And then around noon, I come back and I start checking Anomalous to see if Rick Stokes and the folks have got the information up there as well. And then throughout the day, I'm not only going back and checking Drudge, but I'm also checking just the Google News feed. If you go, you know, the Google News... The Google news feed typically, you know, it kind of...
The Googles. Get it right, Mike.
What? Thank you, Matt. I know. Seriously, I'm working hard here.
The Googles kind of sounds like a disease, like the giggles.
If you think you may be suffering from the Googles, see your doctor today.
I believe, and I could be wrong, I should Google it, but I'm not going to because
I think that's just contributing to the problem.
It's not really that important to me, but I believe a Google is a numeric measure, and I believe a Google is a one with 1 million zeros behind it.
Know the signs. If you have 1 million zeros following you down the street when you go to check your mail, you may suffer from the Google.
So basically, if you're like the cast of the Jersey Shore or Kim Kardashian.
Yeah, you may be.
Because you've got all those zeros following you, man. On Twitter, mostly. But
Matt, can we get a top 10 signs you're suffering from the Google? you are afflicted.
I'm sure I could come up with something, you know?
Top 10 signs you have the Google. But anyway, oh, man. Other news, though. There's so much other stuff, too. And since we're talking about media suppression and all this, you know, there's another story I saw today. City claims Occupy Wall Street protesters were stockpiling weapons. This was Gothamist.com that reported this. This was pretty disturbing. Deputy Mayor Cass Holloway filed a motion on behalf of the city today opposing a court order requiring the New York Police Department to allow Occupy Wall Street demonstrators back into Zuccotti Park. But in filing the motion, Holloway asserted that people who have a known history of violent interaction with the police have been gathering in the park, and makeshift items, he said, could be used as weapons, such as cardboard tubes with metal pipes inside, had been observed among the occupiers' possessions. We won't dwell on this one for very long, but I do want to say, I certainly hope that, you know, whether or not you agree with the occupiers, you know, they've worked hard, and I don't think that many people can deny that, you know, these people are willing to brave the elements, you know, and a number of other adversities in order to stay out there. And I certainly don't, you know, 100% endorse. I endorse the principle for them being there, but, you know, I'm pretty skeptical about a lot of the activities. I hope that in this instance it doesn't come to violence. You know, I think we talked about what was going on in Oakland last week. We may have touched on that at very least. If not, I think I blogged about it at some point. But, you know, in Oakland, California, there was a lot of, you know, heated exchange between the occupiers and police. There were fires being built, and then police action was taken. I think that there was tear gas used, and there was some, you know, description of other kinds of things. I don't know if rubber bullets were used in the Oakland situations, but riots broke out after the fact. Hell, riots broke out after Coach Paterno was fired up there at Penn State, you know? And it's just ridiculous. I mean, the state of affairs in the United States these days, it's getting pretty concerning. I hope we don't see more violence in New York with regard to the Occupy thing. And then there's the geopolitical angle to all this, you know. The growing concerns that Iran is indeed working on some sort of a weapon, and that they have had a nuclear program, and that they never really stopped work on a nuclear program with intent of creating weapons. We've heard stories about China selling Iranians, you know, missiles and things, and breaching UN protocols in order to do this. This sort of thing really concerns me. I find this sort of thing very, very disturbing. And then the story comes up. I'm looking at the Telegraph right now, but I think that the original website to break the story was Gizmodo.com this week. China, according to Google Earth Images, is sporting huge unidentified structures. Okay. Have you guys seen these photographs of these huge structures? I have them up on the screen here, the master screen on the Graylian console. And nobody knows exactly what these things are, but there's a lot of speculation. These things have appeared in the middle of, apparently, the desert out there. And there's more information I'll follow up with here in a moment. But, you know, some of the speculation is really frightening. Some people have said that what these are these are designs that have been made to resemble city streets, so that they can train homing missiles, okay, to be able to follow landmarks and things like that. In two images available on Google Earth, Malcolm Moore reported, he's a correspondent for the Telegraph, reflective rectangles, rather, up to a mile long can be seen, a tangle of bright white intersecting lines that are clearly visible from space. Other pictures show enormous concentric circles radiating on the ground with three jets parked right at their center. In one picture from 2007, a massive orange blocks have been carefully arranged in a circle. And in a more recent image, the blocks, each one the size of a shipping container, appear to have been scattered as far as 3 miles from the original site. Another image shows an array of metallic squares littered with what appear to be the debris of exploded vehicles, while another shows an intricate grid that is almost 18 miles long. I've seen these photographs. We'll have them up at the Graylian Report in our show notes as well. All the sites are on the borders of Yangsu Province and Yijiang, some of which are less than 100 miles from Qiyong, the headquarters of China's space program and the location of its launch pads, which has got a lot of people wondering. The two reflective rectangles lie 70 miles from the nearest main road, and there is no sign of any surrounding activity. However, the Dingyan military airbase, where China carries out its secret aircraft testing program, is relatively nearby at a distance of some 400 miles. 400 miles in the other direction is Lop Nur, the salt lakes where China tested 45 nuclear bombs between the years of 1967 and 1995. Now, with regard to these present structures, nobody knows really what these things are and why they've been built. but some experts have suggested that they might be optical test ranges for Chinese missiles, like I just said, to stimulate the street grids, or rather to simulate the street grids of cities. And you know what, and this is even creepier, what a lot of Americans and people who have been looking at this story have been doing is they've been overlaying these grids to try and see if they match parts of Washington, D.C., or parts of New York. People are concerned. They're like, what the hell is going on? But some of these things just defy explanation. I mean, there's, for instance, what looks like a launch pad in one of the photographs, and then adjacent to it, a similar structure that looks like a launch pad, but it's all this turquoise blue color. Damned if I know what the hell that thing is. Conspiracy theorists believe that Area 51 is home to the remains of an alien spacecraft found at Roswell, and that there was no shortage on Monday of similar hypotheses about the Chinese sites. It looks like our own Area 51, said one commenter on Beidou, a Chinese website. It can be an alien base, asked another. Or maybe it looks like solar energy facilities with a walkway along the side. Maybe that's what's going on. You know, I know that we're doing the same sort of thing in the United States. Attempts at trying to get massive, grand-scale solar projects going on in the deserts. And, of course, government subsidies to back these sorts of things. Some more stimulus dollars and tax dollars, of course, will be going into that. Maybe that's a good thing, you know. I've heard some pretty inspiring stories about solar technology and people, you know, building from scratch, you know, buying parts online, building solar panels, attaching them to their houses, and gathering solar energy that allows them not only to power their own house, but they produce enough energy to be able to sell that power right back to the power companies in their area. Wouldn't that be cool? You could actually gather enough energy to power your home, potentially, and then sell the excess power back to the power companies. So we're talking about energy shortages and things like that, and yet there are people who are on their own building energy systems to power their homes. Maybe we can get into some of that after this.
My name is Sue Smith. I'm 38 and I work at a graphic design company. And the teenage me would tell you,
I wouldn't be into drawing and art if it wasn't for big brothers, big sisters. My big sister showed me early on that I could do anything. And to the young me,
that meant a lot. My big sister's name is Sheila, and Sheila is the reason that this 8-year-old grows up to have an amazing job as a graphic designer.
Whether you donate money or time, you're helping big brothers, big sisters help a child. Start something today at bigbrothersbigsisters.org. Brought to you by Big Brothers Big Sisters and the Ad Council.
The Graylian Report with Micah Hanks. To join the program by phone, call 828-398-4886. Skype users can reach the program by calling Skype ID Graylian Report. And now, from hundreds of miles beneath terra firma, in the depths of the hollow earth, live from the Graylian bunker, it's Micah Hanks.
Actually, I guess we talked about so much serious stuff. It's time to get a little bit more lighthearted, and we're going to turn it over to the Right Reverend himself, Mr. Matt Oakley. Matt, you know, there have been strange things going on down here in the Moho recently. I was sitting in here in the studio by myself the other day, and I got the distinct impression that there was someone in the room with me watching my every move. But every time
there was?
Yeah.
Was that new intern guy?
Oh, Fred.
Yeah.
Yeah, he creeps me out. You know, having Fred creeping around, okay?
Well, I told him to, you know, keep an eye on you.
I told him to keep his knees flexing and his arms T-rexing.
I was going
to
say, having Fred around is like having John Waters creeping around, you know?
Don't forget to smile.
Oh, God, you look creepy. Even when you
That's
did
who
that.
We need on the program is John Waters.
Yes,
man.
Let's get John. Why would we want to have John Waters on
why
the program?
Why wouldn't we want to have John Waters
on the program? Uh-oh.
Have you seen Hairspray?
Or oh, man.
Pecker?
Cry
it's
baby.
The name of a movie. Pecker. Pecker is a movie with Edward Furlong.
Please watch your plosives. I need to get you a new pop filter for that thing.
Pecker. Again, a movie.
Chris is getting me tickled.
What was the title of that flick with Edward Furlong, and he takes pictures?
I think Christina Ricci was in it.
Yeah.
I think it's... No.
No, okay.
Pecker. It's Pecker.
Oh, okay, Pecker. I'm going to throw a pin at you if you don't stop. But first of
It'll
all,
just hit Matt.
Matt, would you... Yeah, I'll throw it at Chris, and it'll go... And then, like, hit him in the face. It's like the boomerang pin from Gradient International. Matt, look, okay, I'm feeling creeped out. I think that there's a presence in the studio. I'm afraid that there's a ghost down here in the Moho. Tell me, what are the top 10 signs that we are haunted?
Yet again, I can help you out with this, as I have many times in the past. Yet another way that you can avoid crazy paranormal phenomenon just attacking you on a daily basis. So
first of all, tell me this though. Are we in any danger? I mean, is there a ghost down here, do you think, in the studio?
You know, really, it's hard to say. I mean, why don't you listen to the list and you tell me what you think? Because I'm still judging it for myself. I've spent a lot of nights in the studio and I haven't really witnessed a lot.
So you're undecided is what you're saying.
Yeah, pretty okay. much.
Well, okay.
But I'll read you the list. You tell me what you think.
All right, let's give it a shot.
Okay. Number one. Something or someone is touching you.
That was so anticlimactic.
Really?
I wanted to try a different drum roll this week, you know?
So basically,
don't
your house is haunted at all times, because at all times, someone may not be touching you, but something most certainly is.
I'm being touched. Whoa, I'm being touched.
Like my shirt currently
Matt,
is touching.
Matt, would you put on your Vincent Price voice, please, and read that one? Try again.
Man, I don't have a Vincent Price voice.
Let's see here.
I don't think anyone has a Vincent Price voice, right? But Vincent Price.
I do, actually. I love mushrooms.
Yeah, no, don't do that. That's not even close.
Oh, that cooking thing you showed me forever ago. That was ridiculous.
How about you do your Christopher Walken voice? That's close enough.
Christopher Walken, you're talking to my guy all wrong. Wrong tone.
No, you see.
Wow.
Oh,
the number
wow.
one sign that...
Number 10.
Here's what it is. Matt's going to read the rest of this top 10. Read the rest of this top 10 as Christopher Walken. Number 2.
Wow. Number 2 is that animals, they may be acting funny. You know, barking at you. or in midair. Or at a room with no one there.
Animals barking in midair. A sure sign that your house is haunted.
You ceased sounding like Christopher Walken and started sounding like Dana Carvey as that German character for Hans and Franz from Saturday Night Live.
Do you remember?
A ghost is going to pump. Are you up?
What about Mike Myers, you know? Welcome to Sprockets. Do you remember that?
Now it is time for Dieter to dance.
Dieter. Dance, DJ. Okay, sorry, Christopher. Go ahead. Mr. Walken, please.
No. Chris says I suck at it, so I
No.
I didn't say you suck. I said you sound like Hans and Franz.
You sound great.
Fine, all right.
Christopher Walken, number three.
All right. You may be feeling like someone's watching you. You know, that uneasy feeling.
I feel uneasy. Yeah, no, wait, hold on. I should have been paying better attention because that's exactly
what you just said happened.
Exactly.
So.
I felt like there was something
that's just one
there.
Sign. Well, I mean, have you experienced any of the other ones?
I mean, no one likes the idea of some thing standing behind them.
I mean, okay, the other two things. No, I haven't experienced those, but I don't know what the other ones are because we haven't got to those. So what? Okay. What are we, number four?
Yeah.
All right, go ahead, Mr. Walken.
Right. Strange smells and cold rooms will accompany a spirit.
Strange smells and cold
so
rooms.
So Chris has had beans and we have the air conditioning on.
Right. Like the ghost of a bean does not count.
Or if Micah decides to fat.
Oh, God. Number five.
F-A-T.
Yes, indeed. I think our Foreign Affairs field correspondent, who doesn't listen to this program unless he's a guest on here, he caught the code. Mr. Walken, number five.
All right, number five. This is a really incomplete sentence, but we'll go Walken.
Go for it, Walken.
Okay. Shadows. Are you sure you saw that? That's all it says, man.
Shadow people, ladies and gentlemen.
Okay, number six. Unexplained noises.
Your gestures.
Wow.
Are what, your gestures are what
my desert flower.
Are you not the angel of death, Mr. Walken? Are you Gabriel?
If the devil was going to send someone, he'd send your grandma Fran. But when she got close, her breath would smell like a bath capsule full of cat crap. Oh. And she would be sneezing maggots.
That's what Chris does every day, though.
Yeah, it's true, man.
Oh, God. Sorry. Look, he's turning green. Poor guy. What are we, number seven?
Lights going off and on by themselves.
Holy jeez. Cripes. What's going on here? You say it. You do it better.
Oh, cripes. The lights. They're going on and off.
Oh, that's really good. Sorry, number seven.
All right. That was seven.
Eight.
Bad. We're on eight, yeah. Doors and cabinets opening and closing. That sucked.
I think
that was
that's
awful.
I think that's a sign of poltergeists, though, actually. I don't know if that's really a ghost, you know?
I think they're kind of lumping everything together.
Could be, yeah. Yeah. It could be that they're, you know, I don't know. Anyway, but we'll hold out to the end. Number nine. Number nine?
Items disappearing and reappearing. Like, Micah, I don't know if you know the story of your father in World War II.
Oh, God. Yes, that was an item that disappeared and reappeared. Wow. Wow. And number 10, ladies and gentlemen.
Number 10. And the top way to tell your house is haunted, your great, 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 Aunt Minnie, that died in 1844, is sitting on your couch with you. And her breath smells like a bath capsule full of cat crap. And she sneezes maggots.
That's the definitive answer right there. Well, folks, I hope you took note because now, courtesy of... Did you know that the Reverend was also a channeler? And he was able to beautifully channel Christopher Walken to aid us in determining whether or not the studio was haunted. I don't know that the studio is haunted. I think that there's just a dark and wicked breeze, I think, that blows through the Moho from time to time here in the Mohorovic discontinuity.
We experience some wicked nights.
We experience some wicked nights down here. But, you know, we know that we are not alone. We might be your light in the darkness, but we would be nothing without you, our dear listeners, and the fine folks that keep us on the air and make this program what it is from week to week. On behalf of Dick Oakley, John Anderson, Chris Hayes, Matt Oakley, Holly, and of course, yours truly, the mouth of the South, Micah Hanks, I bid you adieu. It is the Graylian Report. We spent another fantastic week of weirdness and insight, anomalies, exopolitics, and all this strangeness that we all gather together here Tuesdays from 8 to 11 to try and understand, undertake, but never undermine. We are all equals here in the depths of the hollow earth. My friends, I'm Micah Hanks. Until next time, my friends, stay strange.